From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
In the unveiled Ginger Punch, Unbridled Bell, coming down to the finish. Here comes Unbridled Bell on the outside, and Indian Bell, who's going to get it? Unbridled Bell! Unbridled Bell, nosing out stablemate Indian Bell here in the Beldame.
Mighty Heart is long gone. Mighty Heart has got the Queen's Plate completely wrapped up, and this is a dominant performance. Daisuke Fukumoto, Mighty Heart, full of heart by 8 lengths.
Welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
They're inside the final furlong, and it's Zulu Alpha who shows the way a couple of lengths clear of Arc Low, and back to this is Boxing On. Zulu Alpha is the leader, well in control of the million-dollar Calumet Farm Kentucky Turf Cup. Zulu Alpha wins by 4 lengths.
And Tisno is doubling on the American Horse of the Year.
Mike Pena.
20 years ago, our world and our lives were forever changed with the horrific terrorist attacks on September 11th, 2001. And it was just 6 weeks and 4 days after those attacks that Breeders' Cup made the decision to move forward with the Breeders' Cup World Championships at Belmont Park in Elmont, New York, roughly 24 miles west of Ground Zero. And while we can all remember exactly where we were and what we were doing when we heard the news of those attacks 20 years ago, horse racing fans will never forget Tom Durkin's iconic call of that 2001 Breeders' Cup Classic. Tisnow wins it for America. Good morning once again, everyone, and welcome to another loaded edition of the show that launched a network, the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Pena, Baron of the Backstretch, with you right up until 11 a.m. Eastern, spending some time this morning looking back and paying tribute to that gutsy victory by Tisnow, and of course always remembering those and their families affected and those who lost their lives in those attacks 20 years ago. And although that Breeders' Cup Classic was only a horse race, it really did seem like much, much more. Seems so much bigger in light of what had occurred 6 weeks later. Tisnow's trainer, Jay Robbins, who retired in 2013, is going to join me right around 9:40 Eastern this morning to remember that emotional Breeders' Cup win in 2001. Really looking forward to that visit. You're also going to hear from Hall of Fame jockey Chris McCarron, who was aboard Tisnow that day. You'll hear his thoughts on what it was like being there at Belmont Park 6 weeks after the attacks. Kurt Becker takes a stroll through racing history, as he does every single Saturday morning here on the Equine Forum. That segment is presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. And today he looks back on the events of 20 years ago through the eyes of the racing industry. It is something you won't want to miss. That comes up in the third hour of the program. And speaking of Breeders' Cup, which, by the way, is only 55 days, 9 hours, and 46 minutes away, we're going to see two more horses punch their ticket to this year's World Championships later today at Kentucky Downs. The winner of the FanDuel Turf Sprint will move on to the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint. And the Calumet Turf Cup offers the winner a spot in the starting gate of the Breeders' Cup Turf. Now, you also have three additional win-and-you're-in races at Leopardstown in Ireland today, and two more at the Curra tomorrow. So it is a huge weekend of Breeders' Cup preps. I'm going to visit with owner Jerry Crawford of Donegal Racing at 9 o'clock Eastern. Jerry is part of the ownership group involved with the hard-knocking 7-year-old Arc Low, one of only three horses to have won the Calumet Turf Cup on multiple occasions. He did it last year and also took home top prize in 2018. You throw in the talented Channel Cat from the barn of trainer Jack Sisterson, and you have a pretty strong duo to headline this year's renewal. I'm going to talk with Jack later in the first hour about 8:35 Eastern. So you'll hear from Jerry Crawford of Arc Low. You'll hear from Jack Sisterson talking about Channel Cat. Unfortunately, 2019 Calumet Turf Cup winner Zulu Alpha, who was entered to run in today's race. That was going to make for a great showdown with two former champions of the race. He was entered for trainer or by trainer Mike Maker, and he was scratched and has now been retired from racing. He is going to enjoy the good life at Old Friends in Georgetown, Kentucky. What a place to retire, and all the best to Zulu Alpha and his connections as he begins his next career of R&R, if you will. And if that's not enough great racing action for you this weekend, you have a reigning horse of the year returning to the races for Hall of Fame, for a Hall of Fame trainer north of the border at Woodbine later today. And I'm talking about Mighty Heart, a horse that does have a mighty heart, a horse that only has one eye. And he goes to the post as the 4-5 morning line favorite in the Grade 3 Seagram Cup for trainer Josie Carroll later today. Josie's going to be with me in hour number two of today's show right around 9:20. So that's what you're going to hear in the first 2 hours of the program. But you'll want to make sure you stick around for the full 3 hours. You should do it every week, but make sure you stick around today in particular. Because hour three begins with Sean Clancy's popular In the Room segment, which is his one-on-one jockey-to-jockey conversation with this week retired rider Nick Santagata. Those conversations are always so fantastic because Sean has played the game. And he comes at it from a different angle than even I would do in talking to these riders. It's rider to rider, one-on-one, jockey to jockey, and that comes up at 10 o'clock Eastern. And I'm going to wrap up today's show by debuting a brand new weekly segment at 10:30 Eastern. This is going to be something we're going to do every single week for you here on the program now, the final 30 minutes of the program devoted to this. I ask, they answer. Quite simple. And I'm going to do that with two guys who are never short on opinions, trainer Dale Romans and turf writer Tim Wilkin. And each week, I'm going to ask them a series of questions pertaining to timely topics in thoroughbred racing, and they will share their opinions, which is going to make for some lively debate and should make for a fantastic segment. I'm really excited about this one. So make sure you stay with me for the full 3 hours as I Ask, They Answer with Dale Romans and Tim Wilkin promises to make for one hell of a grand finale on this show each and every week. So here's the guest lineup for you. It begins in just a few minutes after our first commercial break with Pin Oak Stud manager Clifford Berry. He's going to reflect upon the legacy of Pin Oak owner Josephine Abercrombie, who has done so much for this sport and for the industry. And that conversation this morning comes in advance of tomorrow's Pin Oak sale at Fasig Tipton here in Lexington. Promises to be emotional for Clifford and for everybody who has been associated with the farm. The farm isn't going up for sale or anything like that, but you can see where things start to kind of wind down just a little bit. Josephine Abercrombie now, I believe, 95 years old. Should say 95 years young because she's still out there doing what she needs to do. And she loves the sport. She loves the land here in Versailles, Kentucky. Should be a really fun conversation with Clifford coming up here in just a few minutes. 8:35 Eastern, well, right around 8:40 Eastern, actually. Right after today's first bet, I'll visit with Jack Sisterson talking about Channel Cat. Jerry Crawford will be with me at 9 o'clock. Josie Carroll at 9:20. I go down the road to the Breeders' Cup with Jay Robbins, looking back on Tisnow's big win 20 years ago at Belmont Park. That's at 9:40 Eastern time. In the Room with Sean Clancy, his visit with Nick Santagata at 10 o'clock. Kurt Becker's Stroll Through Racing History at 10:25. And then our brand new I Ask, They Answer segment with Dale Romans and Timmy Wilkin at 10:30. About 10:30, but tune in at 10:30. We'll get to it a couple minutes after that, but tune in at 10:30, and I'll get a chance to visit with those guys and ask them some questions. One of the questions that I'm going to bring up to them is actually going to be our poll question this morning. Considering the fact that Saratoga is coming off of another record-setting meet in terms of all sources handle, it was incredible. Would you be in favor of Naira adding more dates to the Saratoga meet? Would you be in favor of NYRA adding more dates to the Saratoga meet? And I'll give you a few choices. Heck yeah. Absolutely not. Or I could take it or leave it. Doesn't really matter. I want to hear from you. You can let me know your thoughts at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. And, of course, if you don't do the social media thing, all you have to do is email the show, mike@horseracingradio.net. And I will try to pass along those responses as we move throughout the program. And, again, that's going to be one of the topics we will debate with Dale Romans and with Tim Wilkin during I Ask, They Answer, coming up at 10:30 Eastern this morning. Would you be in favor of NYRA adding more dates to the Saratoga meet? Heck yeah, absolutely not. I could take it or leave it. Let me know your thoughts now. When I come back, we'll kick it off with Clifford Berry. He is the manager at Pin Oak Stud. He'll look back on the legacy of Josephine Abercrombie. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
Watch and wager on world-class racing from Woodbine Racetrack with Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday post times of 1:10 p.m. Eastern and a Friday post time of 4:50 p.m. Eastern. And on September 18th and 19th, you are not going to want to miss another big 2 days of racing with four Grade 1 races, including three Breeders' Cup Challenge, winning your in races featuring the Woodbine Mile, Natalma, and Summer Stakes. For more information on racing and handicapping, visit woodbine.com. That's woodbine.com.
I'm here with Joe Brown Nicholson of Nicholson Insurance Agency. Joe, how do you value a horse for insurance?
Well, Mike, it's easy to value a horse when purchased out of a public auction. The insured value would simply be the auction price. But insuring homebreds can be a little more involved.
How so?
Well, factors such as a stud fee, confirmation, pedigree, sales and race records of siblings, even popularity of the stallion, all come into play.
How closely do you work with owners in determining a horse's value?
Well, the owner has a pretty good idea of the horse's value, so generally it's just a matter of agreeing to the request and having the policy issued.
For all your equine and general insurance needs, including farm owners, liability, homeowners, auto, and more, contact Joe Brown Nicholson at NicholsonInsurance.com or call 859-224-7080. That's 859-224-7080. Nicholson Insurance Agency.
The spring summer meet is just heating up at Gulfstream Park, with racing now through September 26th, Friday through Sunday. Look forward to the FTBOA Florida Sire Stakes Series starting July 31st. And stay in on the action from the comfort of your mobile phone with First Bet, the official app of Gulfstream Park. For 10 Palms reservations, stake schedules, or tips and analysis, visit GulfstreamPark.com. We are now fully open for public viewing.
When it's time to paint the fences and barns, think Farm Paint. At Farm Paint, you get the industry's best coatings and paints factory direct at low, low prices. Farm Paint is your source for quality paints, roof coatings, dustless arena footings, and more. You can purchase online or drop into a Farm Paint store near you with locations in Heart of Bluegrass Country at 700 Phillips Lane in Lexington, Kentucky, Columbus, Ohio, and Sandusky, Ohio. Buy factory direct and save at farmpaint.com. That's farmpaint.com.
Hello, this is Bill Mott. You're listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Flavia Pratt asking a lot from Bellafina now. She is starting to pick up her stride, but she's got work to do. And here comes Leora. Leora and Channing Hill on the outside of Serengeti Empress, who digs in toward the rail. It's these two, Lady Apples, there and the others, with plenty of work to do. It's down to these two and Serengeti Empress, who's holding off the challenge of Leora as they come down to the line. Serengeti Empress has taken the Kentucky Oaks. Leora was second, Lady Apple was third, then came Champagne Anyone. Bellafina finishes fifth. The final time was 1 minute 50.17 seconds.
Back to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on this Saturday morning. Larry Colmus had the call of the 2019 Kentucky Oaks, won by Serengeti Empress, a daughter of Pin Oak Stallion Alternation. There have been so many good horses that have been raised and foaled on that land in Woodford County, Kentucky, and I have the privilege of welcoming in Pin Oak manager Clifford Berry, who is going to be this week's Industry Star of the Week. And this conversation brought to you by our friend Stuart Morris, who offers a boutique, full-service bloodstock operation and he wants to thank his owners, his clients, and his team. He knows his success is absolutely because of you. And with multiple stakes horses over the past several years that include Henley's Joy, Our Brain Trust, Malagasy, South Bend, Pacific Gale, Nikki the Vest, and so many others, Stuart Morris is your source for success at the highest levels. You can visit the Stuart Morris consignment at all of the upcoming major sales. And without further ado, I do welcome this week's industry star of the week, Clifford Berry, to the program. Clifford, good morning, my friend.
Mike, good morning. How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing very well, and I hope you are too. I mentioned earlier that this conversation comes in advance of the Pin Oak sale at Fasig Tipton tomorrow. It has been a magical run for Josephine Abercrombie and the team at Pin Oak. I believe it was, 1952, if I'm not mistaken, when Mrs. Abercrombie established Pin Oak, and it has just been an incredible ride.
It has, Mike. I mean, it's a little kind of like a fairy tale story, to be honest with you. You know, Mrs. Abercrombie's had an amazing run in this industry. I was looking through some pictures yesterday, and there was a picture of her standing in 1953 at Hialeah Park in the winner's circle with a horse. And that's been a long time ago. That's been way before my time, Mike, let me tell you. So.
Yeah, you didn't walk through the doors until what, 1988? Is that when you first arrived?
Yeah, the spring of 88, and she had accomplished a lot before I ever even got here.
Well, I've had the privilege, Clifford, to host this program from Pin Oak on several occasions, and it is such a gorgeous, pristine setting when you drive through the gates. What is it about that land and that property that still kind of does it for you?
Oh, God. I mean, Mike, I think, you know, when Miss Abercrombie bought this piece of property back in 86, you know, she was a true horsewoman at heart, and she developed this farm with nothing but the welfare and the health of the animal in mind. Lots of space, good grass, it was fresh pasture. You know, she's just been an amazing steward of this property for 30-plus years. And I think just lots of time and patience, planting an abundance of trees. And, you know, this was her home. She made it her home from the early 90s. You know, she just took a lot of pride when she drove through those gates every day and around the farm, and cherished every moment living here. But there was never no stone left unturned for the health and welfare of the horse and the health and welfare of the land also. I mean, it was, she'd always say, you know, 90% of the horse's intake is going to come from the land and the grass. So that has got to be, you know, of the utmost importance in raising a good horse. And actually, that was very, very, very evident from an early stage, but, you know, that the land was important. And I think she has proved from the, you know, pretty bare piece of property to turn this into the estate that it is today. Mike, there's no doubt. It's a dream to wake up here every day and look out the window and see what's around you, you know, from not alone the horses, but the wildlife too. I mean, she's just been an amazing steward of the land and of the business as a whole, to be honest. I mean, she's never wavered in the 30-plus years I've known her. So,
how would you, Clifford, describe Josephine's approach and philosophy to the thoroughbred business?
I think it's never been anything but taking care of the horse and enjoying and love what you do. I mean, she truly loved this game. I mean, just loved the foalings, loved the yearling process and the breaking. And I mean, just really, really loved going to the races in the afternoons. Like, you know, she'd, let me tell you, she's one competitive lady. She's one competitive lady. And she's brought that to her whole life, I believe. You know, from the early days of the show horse world to, you know, skiing to ballroom dancing to the boxing to the horse race. And I mean, she always joked about she just was a need for speed. She was a junkie for speed, you know. So, and I think she was a junkie for excitement and like that adrenaline rush, you know, so.
You know, you mentioned the show horse world, and you mentioned the boxing. She was a boxing promoter. So many people that are listening to the program now, Clifford, certainly here in Central Kentucky, are familiar with Pin Oak Stud and with Josephine Abercrombie. But there are so many people around the country and around the world who are tuned into this program now who were not. So tell me a little bit more about the early days of Josephine Abercrombie and some of that background.
Now, you've got to realize, Mike, I'm only 53 years of age.
Hey, you've been there long enough. You've absorbed something.
There's only so far I'm going to be able to go back. You know, but yeah, the stories are there. I mean, I think from a very early age with her parents, she was very involved in the show horse world. Showed at Madison Square Gardens, you know, still holds major records there today. But then just, you know, as through her life, the show horse world went from there to, you know, coming to Keeneland with her dad and her uncles in the late 40s. I think maybe in late 48, maybe they bought their first yearlings at Keeneland. And that kind of spurred into the development of what I call the old Pin Oak, which was, you know, started in 1952 on a piece of property just outside of Versailles. But, you know, right then, you know, that's where the farm part of it started. And, you know, her dad was an icon in her world and brought her into this business. And she obviously, from there, just developed into, you know, getting into the thoroughbreds more and more. And then, you know, but just through her life, I mean, she just done some amazing stuff. I mean, just some amazing stuff, you know, just stuff that people only dream about. And, you know, when, you know, she'd go out to Vail every year. And I mean, it wasn't just, you know, Miss Arkham, we wasn't happy just kind of pottering around the slopes. I mean, she wanted to be speed skiing. I mean, that's, you know, that was her game, you know. And then, you know, midway through the, you know, even up into the 90s here, when I was here and she started ballroom dancing, she, you know, started out taking lessons. And before long, I mean, just show you that competitive nature. I mean, she's flying around the country, at, you know, in top competition ballroom dancing. And I think she just always has been just that kind of a competitive person. And even, you know, I was the boxing was finishing up as, you know, as I was probably coming into work for her. I mean, I think that was one of those, just a woman breaking into a man's world. And, you know, she was a boxing promoter, but it wasn't even as much about the boxing as it was much about helping a human athlete to be the best that they could be. And, you know, I think from the stories, you know, she built a training center in Houston for them and did everything, you know, was ahead of the curve even at that stage in her life. You know, and I think she's brought the very same philosophies to horse racing. I mean, it's just, there was never any stone left unturned when it was to try to get the best out of matings, out of yearlings, out of racehorses. I mean, she just, you know, she brought the best out in you every day, Mike. I mean, it wasn't once a month or once a week. I mean, it was, you better be on your A game 24/7, you know, so.
And she is now 95 years young, as I mentioned earlier in the program. Still loves being around the horses, still loves getting out on the farm. Clifford, you mentioned that to me the other day, how she loves to ride around with you and just see the land and see the young horses that are there. There are still going to be horses at Pin Oak, even though there is a sale tomorrow at Fasig Tipton offering some of the horses that have been there. The farm is not closing. It is not for sale. It's not that type of situation. We want to make that clear. But, yeah, what a remarkable piece of property and what a remarkable run.
Yeah, look, Miss Arkham's never done anything in life, Mike, without a lot of thought and a lot of vision. And whether that was with her horses or her staff or whatever it was, I mean, and this is just kind of the next step in a phase. I mean, we've been on a slow wind down probably for the last 12 months or so, and this is just kind of the final piece of her puzzle. But yeah, this is really just a commercial arm closing it on. But yeah, the farm will remain open. Miss Arbuckle continues to live here and cherishes living here every day.
Yep.
And, you know, there'll be retired horses here, and there's a couple of older mares here that, you know, will fall out next year. So by no means is this the finish line by any means. This is just a step in some of Mrs. Abercrombie's wishes at this point in her career, so.
I think that's very, very important to point out, because I think when people see that sale, they think, oh boy, this is the end, but it is not. It's just moving into the next chapter. Clifford, when you think about the horses that have been on that land, you think about sires like Sky Classic and Peaks and Valleys and Maria's Mon, Broken Vow, who is still there, by the way, and now Alternation, who is the youngster among the stallion roster there. Tell me about some of the horses that, when you think back on your time there, are just always going to stand out to you.
You know, I think Peaks and Valleys was probably the one horse for Mrs. Abercrombie and myself that maybe really turned the program around, per se. And I remember flying back with her after he'd won the Molson Million. You know, obviously it was an exciting afternoon, and everybody was on a high for sure. But the point that she pushed across, sitting across the airplane, was this is what I want to do. This is the level I want to compete at. And we're going to do everything in our power over the next number of years to do that. And I think she made a huge commitment to going out and buying some new bloodstock and buying some new mares at that point and creating some families. And that's, you know, that takes a lifetime, Mike. And what she has accomplished in my world, in a 30-year period from that point, from Peaks and Valleys, is nothing short of amazing. I mean, to take some of these families from the ground and make them and shape them and have that kind of passion and perseverance and patience. I mean, everybody that's a breeder knows, you know, there's good days and bad, but it takes time, patience, money, and it takes somebody with an amazing vision to see it through. And she really has never backed up from that vision for one time, you know. So,
how about on the racing side of things, Clifford? Do you remember a moment being at the racetrack? Because, as you said, Mrs. Abercrombie loved to be at the racetrack, at the farm. Do you remember a time being at the racetrack with her and watching one of the Pin Oak horses? I mean, there's been many, but is there one or two moments that stand out to you?
You know, probably from a personal note, that the race that we sponsored here at Keeneland, the Valley View, I mean, she won that on two occasions. We were second and third in it a couple of times. But the afternoon that Overheard won, and I don't know that I've ever seen Mrs. Abercrombie as emotional as she was that afternoon of winning a race. The prestige of winning a race in front of your home crowd, your peers here at Keeneland, was very, very, very special. And then a race that you sponsored yourself, you know, that would probably be, for me anyway, would be for, and I think for her too, would be a very special. And it's not alone it was the race, but it was just the fact that it was at Keeneland, and the fact that you bred this filly, you had four generations of her family, and it just takes a long time to get to that point. There's a lot of ups and downs that it takes to get there. But I think that was one of those moments, at least for me. We were walking under the tunnel, and then she said, it doesn't get any better than this. Can you know? I think that was a true statement of how she really felt. So,
yeah, very special moment indeed. Talking with Clifford Berry, the longtime manager at Pin Oak Stud, first walked through the doors in 1988, so it's been 33 years. He is part of the family at Pin Oak. There's no doubt about it. He has raised his family courtesy of everything that has been developed and built at Pin Oak Stud over the years. Clifford, I'll ask you one more question before I let you go. What would you think would be the one thing or the couple of things that you might be most proud of when you think back on everything that has happened over the last 33 years and everything you've accomplished?
That I am most proud of?
Yeah.
I think just being part of Pin Oak, being part of a small part of Mrs. Abercrombie's legacy, and the friends we've developed here, the families we've developed here, both human and equine, Mike, is there's not words that I can put it into to describe that feeling for me. I'll be honest with you, it really isn't. I mean, it's this is a special place. The Sarah Grimby is a very, very special lady. Been a special lady to a lot of people. I mean, Mike, I've been here 30 plus years. We had John Sanders that was 50 years here on Thursday. We've got several staff members that are 25 and 30 years. I think that's just a testament to Mrs. Abercrombie and the Pinoak brand and being a part of a family atmosphere, you know.
Yep, it is a family.
And I think that's probably something that, you know, I'll take with me for a long, long time. I mean, you know, like for me, I guess, for a young guy at 24 years of age to get the opportunity to be involved with Pinoak was, I'm not sure if I was Miss Abercrombie at the time, I'd have given myself that chance. but she obviously, you know, and she did that for a lot of people. I mean, she was very open to give young people the opportunity and then expected you to step up and do the job, you know. So I think that's several of those things are that I'm very, very proud of and very proud to be a part of this family, really. So.
Yeah, I can tell you, Clifford, she made the right call in 1988. You are the right man for the job. You have been part of that fabric of Pinoak Stud and have represented the organization with the utmost class, just like Josephine has done for the industry. And can't thank you enough for spending some time with me again this morning. It's been wonderful to talk about her legacy. I think it's important to get those stories out there. And all the best, my friend. Let me know if there's anything else you need from me, but enjoy tomorrow and enjoy the days ahead, as I know there's plenty more to come at Pinoak.
No, I appreciate it, Mike, and thank you. Thank you kindly for catching up this morning, and thank you for all you do for racing.
All right, thanks. Clifford Berry, manager at Pinoak Stud. He is this week's Industry Star of the Week, and you can see why. Named Farm Manager of the Year by the Kentucky Thoroughbred Farm Managers Club back in 2007. He has done everything the right way from day one, and it was a wonderful decision on Josephine Abercrombie's part to welcome him to the family all the way back in 1988. All right, when I come back, I'm going to get a chance to bring you today's first bet to get you ready to play the races and a visit with Jack Sisterson talking about Channel Cat in today's Calumet Turf Cup. That's all ahead right after your Lexus Legends of the Turf, brought to you by Lexus of Lexington.
When experts gather to discuss the greatest American racehorse of all time, the list includes three that invariably rise to the top of the conversation: Man of War, Citation, and Secretariat. The relative merits of these three superstars may well be undeterminable in actual fact, but Citation's three-year-old campaign was perhaps the singularly greatest individual year ever enjoyed by a racing thoroughbred. Citation's two-year-old record was 8 wins in 9 starts, the only blemish on an otherwise perfect slate, a defeat at the hands of his Calumet stable mate Bewitch when that outstanding filly defeated him in the Washington Park Futurity. Citation was named the two-year-old of the year and ranked alongside Bewitch at the top of the experimental free handicap. At the end of his three-year-old campaign, Citation's weight evaluation was 15 pounds greater than that of his nearest rival. Most three-year-olds campaigning exclusively against their own age group until the second half of the year. Not so Citation. He opened his sophomore season on the track with 2 wins against older horses. He followed that success with 2 wins against his peers before suffering a defeat in a 6-furlong prep race at Havre de Grace in Maryland. That race was to Saggy, sire of the 1968 Kentucky Derby winner Carryback. After that, Citation racked up 15 consecutive victories. Included in that skein were an easy sweep of the Triple Crown races, so easy that it was almost anticlimactic. In the 1948 Derby, Citation was such a prohibitive favorite that Colonel Matt Wynn eliminated place in show wagering in that event. Citation won the Derby by 3.5, the Preakness by 5.5, and the Belmont by 8 open lengths. After totally demolishing and completely demoralizing all the three-year-olds, he went on to become against older horses and won the Stars and Stripes at Washington Park in track record time. Later in the fall, he proved his stamina by sailing home to a 7-length win in the Jockey Club Gold Cup over a distance of 2 miles at Belmont Park. By the end of October, there was not a single horse willing to challenge him in the winner-take-all Pimlico Invitational. That outing turned out to be nothing more than an exhibition for public benefit, a walkover in racing parlance. By the end of 1948, Citation had won 19 of 21 races at 9 different tracks at distances from 6 furlongs to 2 miles. He had been ridden by 3 different jockeys and had won or on tracks listed as fast, good, muddy, heavy, and sloppy. He was not only 3-year-old colt of the year, but also horse of the year, and on top of that, handicap horse of the year. Unfortunately, the rest of Citation's story is dotted with cases of injury and frustration. He was off the racetrack for an entire year because of various ailments. He came back to race at the age of 5 when he won an allowance race in January at Santa Anita. In his next 8 starts, he finished 2nd 7 times with only 1 win. Incredibly, in 6 straight races, he was defeated in track record time. 5 of those losses were in world record time. Plus, he was invariably giving way to the opposition, which makes that record doubly significant. Citation was nearly $100,000 short of becoming race's very first millionaire at the age of 6, so after a 10-month layoff, he did come back. He began that campaign slowly, but finally scored in the Argonaut Handicap and then chalked up a 2nd tough win in the American Handicap. Then on July 14, 1951, in his last race, he nailed down the $100,000 first prize in the Hollywood Gold Cup to attain the coveted million-dollar earnings mark his owners had doggedly pursued for 3 years. In 45 career starts, Citation had 32 wins and was in the money 44 times. But that 3-year-old campaign goes unmatched to this very day. Neither Man O' War nor Secretariat campaigned at the age of Citation's later efforts, so we will never know. But Citation was indeed one of the very best horses that I personally have ever seen.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and innovative technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. This is Mike Pena, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience driving any Lexus model is unparalleled. Visit Lexus of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for over 15 years. Experience the enjoyment of Lexus and the enjoyment of shopping Lexus of Lexington. The people there truly make the difference. Long-tenured, friendly, knowledgeable team members, no pressure, no hassle. I promise, it's not your typical dealership experience. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, and Lexus of Lexington continues to sponsor Keeneland's Raven Run Stakes each fall. So from one horse person to another, the next best thing to being around horses is driving a Lexus. Visit Lexus of Lexington and tell them Mike sent you.
Kentucky Downs is home to the best turf racing in America and attracts the largest fields in the country, competing for over $15 million in purses over 6 days, making it the largest prize money available in thoroughbred racing due to the addition of KTDF funds. Sign up for Kentucky Downs Turf Handicapping Challenge presented by DRF and win NHC and BCBC entries, as well as a chance to be crowned the Bet Makers King of the Turf. For more information on how to sign up, visit kingoftheturf.com.
The spring summer meet is just heating up at Gulfstream Park, with racing now through September 26th, Friday through Sunday. Look forward to the FTBOA Florida Sire Stakes Series starting July 31st. And stay in on the action from the comfort of your mobile phone with First Bet, the official app of Gulfstream Park. For 10 Palms reservations, stake schedules, or tips and analysis, visit GulfstreamPark.com. We are now fully open for public viewing.
The test of time. There is no better example than Millridge Farm. Founded in 1962 by Alice Chandler, this year's inductee into the Hall of Fame as a pillar of the turf, Millridge has raised or sold 36 Grade 1 winners, including 8 Breeders' Cup winners and 2 Horses of the Year since 2000. This Keeneland September sale, Millridge offers a quality group throughout the various books, led by leading stallions Uncle Mo, Curlin, Candy Ride, Gunrunner, Kitten's Joy, and several promising first-year sires. Millridge will be showing at Barn 11 starting September 10th. Millridge, standing the test of time.
This is Jockey Rajiv Maharaj, and I love the Horse Racing Radio Network, the best show on the planet.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
making their way around the turn, and the leader is Bombard. With plenty of competition coming for Bombard at the top of the stretch, Richie's in the house is second, Tiger Blood outside of them, Front Run the Fed fourth as they turn for home, then Renaissance Frolic on the inside, Stubbins is in behind that group, still wide open, 3/16 of a mile to run, Front Run the Fed moves up on the outside to challenge for the lead, Tiger Blood and Primus is going on to their inside, Bombard continues to fight. There's a 16th to go, and it's wide open coming down to the wire. Front Run the Fed and Imprimus. And on the inside, Bombard. Imprimus did it, and he goes to the Breeders' Cup. Bombard in a photo with Front Run the Fed, and then it was Stubbins.
Welcome back. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch. Here with you on Saturday morning, September 11th, remembering all of those who were affected by the terror attacks 20 years ago. I'm going to look back on the 2001 Breeders' Cup, which was held just 6 weeks after the September 11th attacks in Elmont, New York at Belmont Park. I'm going to do that later in the program. But up next, it's going to be Jack Sisterson talking about today's Calumet Turf Cup and his contender, Channel Cat, who is owned, by the way, by Calumet. So we'll talk to Jack about that coming up here in just a couple of minutes. That was Imprimus. Winning the 2020 Turf Sprint at Kentucky Downs. He's back this year to defend his title. That is a win and you're in for the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint, so we'll see if he can pull that off. It is a huge day in Southern Kentucky heading down toward Nashville, the Kentucky Downs. What an interesting course, too. Undulating, all grass. Should be a fantastic afternoon. Good afternoon at Gulfstream Park, too, which brings me to your next segment. It is time to get you ready to bet the races with today's first bet.
And now, today's first bet.
Today's first bet comes in race 9 at Gulfstream. It is the Florida Sire Stakes, Susan's Girl. 4:36 p.m. Eastern is the post. And it's number 6, Sassenach, who is 5-2 on the morning line and has a 28% win projection from first bet. Rates 15 points higher than the next closest rival. Ranks top 2 in 5 of the 8 most important first bet factors for the race. An 8-length winner of the Desert Vixen to kick off the Phillies Florida Sire Stakes series. Adding blinkers produced big results for this filly in her second start after drifting in her debut defeat. And she is one of only 3 last out winners in the field of 11. Number 6, My Sassenach, in race 9 at Gulfstream Park, is today's first bet. I'm back with more in 60 seconds right after this word from First Bet.
Have you heard about the new handicapping and betting app that is sweeping the nation? It's called First Bet, and it puts the power of AI-assisted handicapping, seamless wagering, and live HD video in the palm of your hand. Thousands of bettors have already made First Bet their way to handicap, bet, and watch more than 300 of the world's top tracks. Isn't it time for you to join them? And when you give First Bet a try today, you can cash in on a huge welcome bonus. Sign up with promo code SPORTOFKINGS, all one word, and you will get $10 just for joining, as well as a 10% rebate, up to $500 for your first 30 days. With that much free cash on the line, what do you have to lose? Get started at first.com/bet. That's number1st.com/bet. And don't forget promo code SPORTOFKINGS when you sign up. And if you already have an ExpressBet account, you're way ahead of the game. Simply log into FirstBet using your username and password, and you're off to the races.
Up to 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with FirstBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal, void, or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
Well, I told you that the Calumet Turf Cup at Kentucky Downs, not only is it a win and you're in later today, but you also have the fact that you have Arklow, the two-time winner, coming back in that race. You have Channel Cat for trainer Jack Sisterson and owner Calumet Farm trying to win a race that they're sponsoring. Keep in mind that Channel Cat won the Dueling Grounds Derby 3 years ago when he was trained by Todd Pletcher. That's at Kentucky Downs. That's when he was a 3-year-old. Now 6, the son of English Channel is looking to pull off a big win with Johnny V in the irons later today. And Jack Sisterson, his trainer, is with me now. Jack, good morning.
Mike, thanks for having me. Good morning.
I know it's a busy morning for you, so I won't keep you long. We were actually scheduled to do this interview a little bit later at 9:20. You were kind enough to move back into this slot because of the fact that Hall of Fame trainer Josie Carroll had to go a bit later at Woodbine, so that was the reason behind that, my friend.
No problem at all, Mike.
I know one day when Jack Sisterson's in the Hall of Fame, we'll get a chance to bump somebody out of their slot and move Jack into there.
Don't wait too long. You might be waiting a long time.
Well, listen, man, I'm looking forward to seeing Channel Cat strut his stuff later today. You give a leg up to Johnny V again. Talk to me about Channel Cat and how he's coming up to the race today.
He's doing great. You know, he's checked all the boxes that we'd like to see from a barn perspective going into a race like that. You know, he's done most of his work for this race at the, on the Oklahoma turf course at Saratoga. He shipped down probably 2 weeks ago and just had an easy half a mile on the dirt here at Keeneland. And, you know, from a physical, energy, appetite, training standpoint, he couldn't be doing any better.
Three starts ago, he won the Grade 1 Man of War. It was his first Grade 1 victory. It was a special day for you. He held on. He won by a nose that day after going to the front. Johnny was aboard that day, too. He knows the horse. That has to be an advantage, especially going to a track like Kentucky Downs.
Very much so. Like you mentioned earlier, you know, he's a course winner, which obviously gives us an added little boost of confidence going into a race like that, because it's a bit of an unsure, you know, to know which horse is going to handle the track down there. You know, we were in two minds after the Bowling Green to run him there in the Sword Dancer at Saratoga or shoot for the Calumet Cup. I got with the racing office there and got the list of nominations and the probables, and there's a couple of other speed horses going to the Sword Dancer, and we felt the Calumet Cup was a better fit for Channel Cat. And when you speak to Ron Anderson, John Velasquez, his agent, and ask, would John like to ride? And when you get a Hall of Fame rider wanting to ride him back, you probably know you're in the right sort of spot.
What did you make of his last effort in the Bowling Green, where he had the lead and then he was game in the stretch, but ultimately ended up finishing fourth?
Yeah, I don't really know what to take of it, to be honest, because he got an easier sort of lead with soft enough sort of fractions, and I thought, you know, he would have maybe finished up a little bit better. Wasn't his day, you know, he just, you know, we made no excuses for that. But you sort of diagnose his form, and he went 47 for the half, a lot quicker, winning the Man of War. Is he a type of horse then kind of like a next go, come and catch me, and that touch quicker, you sort of create a little bit more separation from the closers. You know, I don't know what to take the effort. You know, by all means, he didn't disgrace us, but, you know, watching it live, I thought, you know, a half and 49 inch change, this is perfect. So that being said, I don't know. People are going to ask, will you make the lead this afternoon? I'm going to leave that up to John. I'm not going to get in his way. You know, I don't tell jockeys what to do. You know, they study the form. They know what they're going to do. And it'll be interesting to see, you know, what Louis Saez does with Tide of the Sea immediately to our outside. I'm sure now with the scratch of Zulu Alpha, Wayne Catalano's will draw in and he shows a bit of speed. But I think, you know, initially, if you really diagnose it, I think we're probably the quickest horse the first quarter of a mile, and I think that could determine, you know, who's going to win the race. It's going to be a real jockey's race going into that first sort of turn, and the race could be won then.
Yeah, the horse that many people think that you'll have to beat, and of course you got to beat all of them, of course, but Arklo, who has won the race twice, he won it last year and then 3 years ago, he's looking to pull off a third win in this event. But he has a completely opposite running style to you, Jack. He comes from way, way back. I'm sure Johnny will be aware of a horse closing, any horse closing, but certainly he'll know if it's Arklo because he has one hell of a kick.
Yeah, and I'm pleased you mentioned that because obviously John reads the form as well as everyone, and they've got different running styles, so we're not going to be, you know, conflicting each other early on in the stages. And from my standpoint, you always worry when you got to run against Brad Cox because he's very good, and I don't mind telling Brad that. So yes, it's a concern of ours, but going into the race, we wouldn't switch Channel Cat with anyone.
Channel Cat 9-2 on the morning line. He is owned by Calumet Farm. Jack has fallen into a wonderful situation training so many of their horses. He is a son of their stallion, English Channel. What's it like trying to win a race that Calumet sponsors while you're training for them?
They've put me in a very humbling position, Mike. You know, I sort of got to pinch myself you know, every minute to remind me sort of I'm not dreaming. It's a special day today, and hopefully it's a special moment that I can represent the farmer in a good way and just pay back. You know, they've given me an opportunity of a lifetime, and I'm forever in debt to Calumet, and hopefully I can pay some of that debt off to them this afternoon. I'm sure the farm will be watching, and, you know, Eddie Kane, the farm manager, he just does so much work behind the scenes that people don't know, and it's very rewarding when we win with the homebreds, and, you know, you pick up the phone to the farm and thank them, and there's so many people from, you know, the Stallions barn, the mares, the yearlings, the foals, and it's sort of, the public don't see how much hard work and effort gets put before I actually receive a two-year-old. You know, I might only have a two-year-old for 6 weeks and it runs. Well, guess where that two-year-old's come from? The farm that's done all the hard work. So it'll be very rewarding with a victory this afternoon for the farm.
Yeah, it does take a village. We say that all the time. Jack Sisterson is with me now. He is the man who will be in the headlines if he wins. But as you heard him say, there is a team behind him that gets these horses ready before he even sees them. And it's quite an operation there at Calumet. That's not the only horse you will saddle in those Calumet silks today, Jack. The next race, the Franklin Simpson Stakes, which is a grade two, you'll send out Tango, 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 who is on the opposite end of the spectrum in terms of the morning line. He's a long shot at 20-1, comes out of that second place finish in the grade one Bruce D Stakes at Arlington on August 14th. Tell me more about Tango, Tango, Tango.
He's actually going to scratch, Mike.
Okay.
We scratched him there just due to the fact that he's going to run next week at Belmont in the Jockey Club Derby. You know, he's cutting back in trip, going 6.5, sprinting him for the first time. And again, I spoke to the racing office in New York, and, you know, I think it's going to come up a light field, and we could get an easy lead up there, and we've got Flavian Pratt to ride. So we sort of, as a group, you know, huddled up together and thought the best, you know, spot for him would be next week at Belmont.
You know, that's incredible, Jack. Listening to you talk, and you did it with Channel Cat too, kind of hearing your thought process as you look at the races and the spots that you want to run these horses. It's not like you just say, you look at the condition book and you say, okay, let's go here, let's go here, let's go here. There is an awful lot of thought that goes into the planning of a horse's campaign.
Very much so. You know, I'm so grateful for the staff, the team I have behind me, because, you know, I'm sitting here chatting to you, and guess what? I have 50 people back in the barn that's doing all the hard work. I involve them. I like to tell each groom what you know, each horse is planning for. And I really feel that, you know, they get more involved and they're more enthusiastic about the work. And we treat each horse individually as well as staff members. And each horse is different. Each staff member is different. And to sort of go back to what, you know, we try and map out a campaign for each horse. And, you know, these guys in the racing office, I don't think get the credit they should as well, because they update me of list of probables, who's pointing where. But if it wasn't for them, I couldn't make the correct judgment of what I thought was best speech if it wasn't for them. So I have to thank, you know, all the racing officers and all the tracks that give us that information, because if it wasn't for them, we couldn't, you know, then inform the owner to this is who's pointing to this race and things like that. So a lot of credit from a standpoint of campaigning horses. The information, you know, you can see it online, Equibase, but then you have to sort of know who's actually pointed for a race. So those people in the racing office do a lot of hard work that goes unknown, and I'd like to thank those guys.
Well, Jack, I know you have another set to send out here at 9 o'clock, so in 30 seconds or less, give me a quick update on your grade one winning sprinter, Lexingtonian.
He's doing very well. It's very unfortunate, you know, the stumble at the start there in the Fogo. I thought he would have been forwardly placed again and would have run a competitive race. That being said, I'm not sure if he would have been bit by Frisian Fire, so it might have worked out. Best for him. He's back home at Keene and doing very well. He'll have his first breeze back next weekend, and he'll point for the Breeders' Cup sprint there at Del Mar.
Good luck today, my friend.
Thank you, Mike. Have a great day.
All right, Jack Sisterson here on the Equine Forum. When I come back, I'll get you set for hour number two. It begins with owner Jerry Crawford talking about two-time Calumet Turf Cup winner Arklow. That should be fun. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
McKinsey, new for 2021 at Gainesway. The son of Kentucky Derby winner Street Sense, McKinsey was named a TDN Rising Star following his five-length debut victory at Santa Anita and was an undefeated Grade 1 winning two-year-old, the fastest juvenile of 2017. McKinsey scored four Grade 1 victories in his career with Grade 1 wins at 2, 3, and 4.
Furlong to go. McKinsey is in front. Axelrod set down by Joe Bravo. Mike Smith working on McKinsey. McKinsey holding on. Axelrod is full out. McKinsey is clear as they come down to the finish. Baffert, Smith, McKinsey, they've done it. McKinsey has it by two.
Coming to the final furlong, McKinsey's in front. Yoshida runs after him on the outside. Vino Rosso is third. McKinsey comes by the 16th pole, and he's going to do it. McKinsey has won the Whitney.
11 triple-digit buyer speed figures, earnings over $3.4 million. McKinsey, standing at Gainesway.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony's Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at TonysSteaksAndSeafood.com.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family-owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
I'm Nyheim Hines, professional football player. No matter the challenges I face every day in the NFL, my mom is always there for me, despite her own struggles with muscular dystrophy. And MDA is there for my mom. At their 150 care centers across the U.S., MDA is a leading organization in research and care for kids and adults with muscular dystrophy, ALS, and related neuromuscular diseases. Join me and learn more at helpmda.org today. Thank you.
Get in-depth handicapping advice on the Weekend Stakes Preview, presented by Naira Betts, every Friday from 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern. Anthony Stabile and Bobby Newman look forward to all of the weekend's biggest stakes races and break down each one with expert analysis. Get a jump on the competition with the Weekend Stakes Preview, presented by Naira Betts, Fridays at 6 on Sirius 219, XM 201, or streaming at horseracingradio.com.
Hey, it's Corey Lannery. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Arclo's got a big shot. As they come into deep stretch, here comes Bigger Picture and Arclo. They tackle Solio. There's a 16 to go. Arclo leads to Bigger Picture. It's Arclo in front. Arclo, Solio, and Bigger Picture. Arclo and Florent Giroux stylishly. They take the Calumet Farm Kentucky Turf Cup.
As they arrive at the 316th pole, here's Red Knight, Zulu Alpha on the outside, and Arclo down toward the rail. The three of them are right together as they come into the final furlong. Arclo, Red Knight, Zulu Alpha, third is Arclo. Arclo's got it close to home from Red Knight. Arclo and Florent Giroux have won.
Arclo, just one of three horses to win the Calumet Turf Cup on multiple occasions. He'll look to become the first to ever win it three times. When he goes to the post later today, going to visit with his owner, Jerry Crawford of Donegal Racing, coming up momentarily. That should be a fun visit. Want to remind you, though, that archery season has now opened for whitetail deer here in the state of Kentucky. And so many of you are avid sports people out there, and you like to get out in the woods, and you like to enjoy some time doing some hunting, some fishing. And if you do that, then you'll want to visit Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore in Nicholasville, Kentucky. It is just 3 miles south of the Fayette Mall on Nicholasville Road, owned by former horse trainer Tevis McCauley. And when you look at their offerings, they really have something for everyone. Whether you hunt deer, you hunt turkey, you hunt ducks, you like to fish, they have so much more. They even have two indoor archery ranges there, so you can stop in and see them today. It is the Whitetail Heaven Outfitters Elite Outdoor Superstore in Nicholasville, Kentucky, and they really are fantastic, and their selection is really unparalleled. So make sure you stop in and see them. Tev is going to join me on the program here in a few weeks during Keeneland. We're going to do some handicapping. It'll be fun to catch up with him as he's still a massive fan of the sport of thoroughbred racing, even though he's not training full-time anymore. Again, Jerry Crawford coming up in just a few minutes. Our poll question today, let's get you updated there. Brand-new segment debuting at 10:30 Eastern this morning. I ask, they answer with Dale Romans and Tim Wilkin. And they are both extremely opinionated, so it should be a fantastic segment. Let me find the poll question for you. The poll question today, threw it out there at the top of the show. Would you be in favor of NYRA adding more dates to the Saratoga meet? And I asked that question because they come off of another record-setting meet in terms of overall handle. Heck yeah, absolutely not. Take it or leave it. Those are the three choices. So far, 57% of you are saying absolutely not. I am going to ask that question to Dale Romans, to Tim Wilkin at 10:30 Eastern during I Ask, They Answer. We'll talk about that topic. We'll talk about a few others, too. Should be a lot of fun, so make sure you stay with me for that one. All right, when I come back, it is Jerry Crawford to begin hour number two, and I'll tell you about what's ahead on the rest of the program right after we pause. 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Welcome back. It's a busy day in thoroughbred racing, not just here in the United States, but around the globe. You have the two winning your ins at Kentucky Downs later today, including that Calumet Turf Cup. You also have three winning your in races at Leopardstown in Ireland. And tomorrow you have two more at the Curragh. So in total, seven horses going to earn a spot in the starting gate of the Breeders' Cup World Championships November 5th and 6th at Del Mar. Of course, we will be there as your exclusive radio home of the Breeders' Cup World Championships. We have done that every single year since 2007. It has been a wonderful ride, and we are so happy and so privileged to be able to bring you the Breeders' Cup on radio. The only place you'll hear the Breeders' Cup on radio is with us. We will be there all week long, and you can head over to our website, horseracingradio.net, to check out the complete Breeders' Cup week schedule and, of course, all the action Friday and Saturday live from Del Mar here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Going to work on getting Jerry Crawford with us here in just a couple of minutes. We are efforting Jerry, as they say in the business. He will talk about his two-time Calumet Turf Cup winner, Arklow. Josie Carroll, the Hall of Famer who saddles Horse of the Year, Mighty Heart, later today at Woodbine, is going to stop by for a visit at 9:20. At 9:40, I go down the road to the Breeders' Cup and remember that fantastic win by Tisnow in the 2001 running, just 6 weeks after the 9/11 attacks. It was at Belmont Park. It was emotional. There was a lot of debate whether the event should even be held. They decided to press forward with it. Tisnow defeating Saki. Tom Durkin with that unbelievable, iconic call. Tisnow wins it for America. I'm going to talk to Tisnow's trainer, Jay Robbins, at 9:40 to look back on that day. You're also going to hear from Hall of Famer Chris McCarron as he shares his thoughts with us on what it was like being there at Belmont Park from the jockey's perspective. In the Room with Sean Clancy comes up 10 o'clock Eastern. Today he sits down with retired jockey Nick Santagata for that one-on-one jockey-to-jockey conversation. Kurt Becker takes you on a stroll through racing history coming up at 10:25. And then at 10:30, the debut of our brand-new weekly segment will wrap up the show every single week beginning at 10:30 Eastern with I Ask, They Answer. That's with Dale Romans and Tim Wilkin. And several topics scheduled to be debated today, including the question that I pose as our poll question. Do you feel, coming off of the record-setting meet at Saratoga, that NYRA should consider expanding the Saratoga meet even further? So far, the majority of you thinking, no way, shouldn't do it. There are other topics we'll debate, including Louis Saez. I'm going to ask Dale and Tim about Louis Saez, who walked away with his first riding title at Saratoga, topping 2015 winner Erod Ortiz Jr., and I'm going to ask them if Louis Saez is the best jockey in the game today. You could make that argument. Now, I know that there are a lot of unbelievable jockeys in this sport right now. But is anybody riding better than Luis Saez? We'll talk about that. Going to also talk about Essential Quality being the top horse on the new Breeders' Cup Classic poll that came out this past week. He is ahead of Nick's Go. He is ahead of Maxfield. He is ahead of Max Player. Did the voters get that one right? Is the three-year-old Essential Quality, as of today, the horse to beat in the Breeders' Cup Classic? I'll ask Dale. I'll ask Tim that question. And we'll talk about the information that came out from the Jockey Club this week regarding the foal crop. The projection for the 2022 foal crop, 18,700 foals next year. That's 500 fewer foals than the 2021 foal crop estimate. And I'll ask Tim, I'll ask Dale, is that cause for concern in the industry or is it no big deal? Those topics and more all ahead on I Ask, They Answer coming up at 10:30 Eastern Time. Again, working on getting a hold of Jerry Crawford for you here from Donegal Racing. You know, Arklow, when you think about what this horse has done, he's 7 years old, and not just what he's done, but what he continues to do. He's 7 years old, which in itself is fantastic. He is not a gelding. 9 wins from 34 starts. He has earned more than $2.7 million. He loves Kentucky Downs. Loves it. 3 starts there. 2 wins in a second. And, of course, the 2 wins coming in the Calumet Turf Cup. Unfortunately, he doesn't get a showdown with Zulu Alpha, who won the race 2 years ago. That would have been great to see. It was announced that Zulu Alpha was scratched from the race and would be retired. He is now going to live out his days at Old Friends in Georgetown, and I can't think of a better place for Zulu Alpha to retire. But that would have been fun to see. Florent Giroux gets a leg up aboard Arklow today. Florent knows this horse really, really well. He was aboard for last year's win in the Turf Cup. And he was aboard him last time out of Del Mar. Now, Arklow brings his game wherever he goes. Yes, he loves Kentucky Downs, which gives him an advantage today. But he shows up everywhere. And he's just a throwback horse. He's a horse that shows up and runs his race every single time. And you would expect nothing different today under Florent for trainer Brad Cox. You heard from Jack Sisterson in the first half of the program. And he talked about Channel Cat in there. And Channel Cat, the complete opposite of Arklow. He's the anti-Arklow in terms of his running style. He's going to be out front. Jack said there are other horses in here that have a little bit of speed, but he thinks that Channel Cat is probably the quickest of the quick. He's baffled, though. He's baffled by what happened last time out in the Bowling Green because Channel Cat got away with super soft fractions on the front end that day. 49-1, 114-2. I mean, for a horse of Channel Cat's caliber, a grade one winner, that is a dawdling pace. No way he should have backed up. He was the 3-1 favorite that day, too. But he came out of the race fine. Jack said it was a head scratcher. And I think sometimes you just have to chalk it up to the fact that these horses are not machines. How many times have we said that over the years? You can look at them on paper, and quite frankly, that's what makes handicapping so challenging. You can look at them on paper. Everything can play out the way it's supposed to on the racetrack, and the horse just doesn't show up that day. It's like any athlete. You have a bad day. Field goal kickers miss kicks. Receivers drop passes. Hitters strike out. Multiple times in a game. Guys make errors. It happens. Channel Cat just, for whatever reason, he shouldn't have backed up. I bet you if Jack Sisterson could have wrote the script going into the Bowling Green last time out, he would have probably said, let us go 49 and change. Let us go 114-2, and this race is over. It is lights out when we turn for home. Not the case. Didn't happen. So he's concerned about Tide of the Sea, who breaks just to the outside of him under Luis Saez. I just mentioned his name as maybe the top jockey in the country today. Tide of the Sea has some early speed, too, for trainer Mike Maker. But Jack thinks they're faster. They both have a win at Kentucky Downs, so that'll be interesting to see. Do the two of them duel each other into defeat? Or do they just kind of go at a leisurely pace and the two of them finish 1-2? That could happen, too. We see that a lot. Does it set up for Arklow if they get out there and go too fast? It certainly would help. That's a good race. Again, Zulu Alpha retired. If you missed that news just moments ago, he is retired. He is scratched from the Turf Cup today, so you can take him off your list. Post time, 5:44 Eastern, 4:44 local time at Kentucky Downs for that one. It is one of two win-and-you're-in races on the program. The other one, the Turf Sprint, is the race before it. That's 6 furlongs on the grass. Race number 8, win-and-you're-in for the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint. And we see Imprimus come back. He's a cool horse. Breaks from the outside, which should be fine, under Irad Ortiz Jr. The defending champion in this race, going to try to make it 2 in a row. Son of Pin Oak Stallion Broken Vow. And speaking of Pin Oak, if you missed that, my visit with Clifford Berry in hour number 1 was excellent. Fantastic. With Clifford looking back on the legacy and the life of Pin Oak owner Josephine Abercrombie. So many top moments. And as you heard him say, she is somebody who just loves the horse, loves the land. She is 95 years young. And she continues to embrace getting out on the farm with Clifford and going for a ride in the golf cart or in the truck and seeing the land, seeing the wildlife. There are so many deer and turkeys. And she is just appreciated everything about what that piece of property has offered her and provided her and provided Clifford and his family. And it was a really fun visit. Of course, tomorrow is the Pin Oak Sale at Fasig Tipton here in Lexington, Kentucky. They are offering weanlings and broodmares and some of the horses off of the farm that we'll be selling. And that's emotional because it's kind of the end of a chapter. But as Clifford said, there will still be horses there. The farm is not closing. This is not the end. It is just the beginning of a new chapter for Pin Oak Stud. If you missed any portion of the first half of the program, that interview with Clifford Berry, the interview with Jack Sisterson, all you have to do is head back to our website, horseracingradio.net, and you can check out the podcast at your leisure. Coming up in just a little bit, again, still efforting Jerry Crawford. Doesn't look like he's going to be able to join us today. We've not been able to get a hold of him, but coming up in just a little bit, you're going to hear from Josie Carroll, the Hall of Famer. She'll join me from Woodbine as she gets set to saddle reigning Horse of the Year Mighty Heart in today's Seagram Cup. Mighty Heart's a cool story, too. There's a horse with one eye who gave Josie her third win in the Queen's Plate last year, which, if you're not familiar with the Queen's Plate, it is Canada's version of the Kentucky Derby, all for Canadian-bred three-year-olds. It's a wonderful, wonderful event. And I always have so much fun catching up with Josie. She is so smart. I mean, there's a reason she's in the Hall of Fame, right? She's very, very good. She's a wonderful horsewoman. But she is so smart, and she's smart in placing her horses. She was going to join me earlier in the show. I asked her to join me where Jack Sisterson was in the first hour of the program. But she said that she had horses she had to get to the track that are going in the stakes races next weekend, so she was happy to do it a little bit later here, so she'll join me in a few minutes. But she's always thinking about her next move with these horses, and I always have a great time catching up with Josie Carroll. That comes up at 9:20, and again, that road to the Breeders' Cup with Jay Robbins, the trainer at Tisnow. I was so excited when Jay said that he would be with me for that segment, because you don't hear from Jay Robbins that much anymore since he retired in 2013. And yeah, he'll be remembered for Tisnow, certainly, and he should. But he had so many other good horses, too. So I'm really looking forward to hearing what it was like for Jay Robbins being at Belmont Park 6 weeks after the 9/11 attacks. I remember where I was, certainly, and exactly what I was doing, but I'm sure so many of us do, if not all of us. But I remember there was so much debate as to whether the Breeders' Cup was even going to be run that year or if it was going to be canceled. And it wasn't just Breeders' Cup. There were so many major sports that were battling that same issue. And I think one thing that came out of that race is that you realized after everything that had happened, we were once again reminded that, hey, it's a horse race, man. Yeah, it's the Breeders' Cup Classic. Yeah, it's a lot of money. Yeah, it means an awful lot to all of us who make a living in this industry. But in the grand scheme of things, it's a horse race. And in light of what had just happened 6 weeks earlier, it was didn't seem all that important. But what occurred on the racetrack and Tiznow's courageous victory over Saki, and then Tom Durkin summing it up beautifully with Tiznow wins it for America, it took on a greater meaning. It just felt so much bigger than a horse race, even though we all knew that's all it was. But it became so much more. And Tom Durkin's call just will go down in history. It was simply brilliant. All right, coming up next, I'm going to talk with Josie Carroll. Again, at Jerry Crawford, I'm sure he was detained here this morning. We won't get a chance to catch up with him talking about Arklow, but we will talk to Josie Carroll coming up in a few minutes. We'll talk to her about her Horse of the Year, Mighty Heart. Again, Jay Robbins coming up at 9:40. In the Room with Sean Clancy at 10 o'clock, Kurt Becker's Stroll Through Racing History at 10:25, and the debut of our brand new segment with Dale Romans and Tim Wilkin, I Ask, They Answer. You won't want to miss that. That comes up at 10:30. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
After an unprecedented year apart, the time has finally come to say, welcome back, fans, to the Breeders' Cup World Championships. Welcome back to the prestige and excitement to witnessing history firsthand. As the world's most majestic athletes look to be crowned champion in 14 thrilling Breeders' Cup races, and over $31 million in purses and awards waits across the finish line. On November 5th and 6th at Del Mar, the Breeders' Cup will welcome it all back. The world's best thoroughbreds, the brightest stars, and the most passionate fans. An experience that's a breed apart. Tickets on sale now at BreedersCup.com/tickets.
Live racing is back at Churchill Downs September 16th through October 3rd. With the same strong purses back from summer and four new stakes races, you won't want to miss live racing at Churchill Downs. With the win in your end Grade 3 Iroquois a Derby points race and Grade 3 Pocahontas an Oaks points race on September 18th, plus the new Bourbon Trail, Louisville Thoroughbred Society, Harrods Creek, and Seneca Stakes, this September meet is sure to be full of excitement. For more racing information and to get your tickets today, visit ChurchillDowns.com.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
Turner Loose has something left in the tank. Ying Yang is all out in second. Then comes Very Little Sense in third. It is Turner Loose and Florent Giroux did. And she won for fun.
Turner Luce, the undefeated two-year-old daughter of Darley Stallion Nyquist, remained perfect with that huge five-length win in the $500,000 Juvenile Filly Stakes at Kentucky Downs on Labor Day. Trained by Brad Cox, Turner Luce is indeed your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Darley Stallion Nyquist, an Eclipse champion at two when he won three grade ones, including the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. Nyquist is the leading cumulative second crop sire by earnings, grade one winners, grade one horses, and graded stakes horses. Learn more about Nyquist and all the Darley Stallions by visiting DarleyAmerica.com.
Okay, this is Carl Nasker, and I listen to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
And they're inside the quarter pole. Edenwald and Sterwins. Who will blink first? Sterwins on the outside. To the inside, Edenwald. Malakoff has flattened out a bit. Then Shoaley Smooth. Edenwald on the inside is running the race of his life. They're in the final 16th of a mile. Edenwald and Emil Ransemi to win the 147th running of the Queen's Plate. Sterwins was second, a show photo between Malakoff and Ascot Bill.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on this Saturday morning. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, with you. Anytime you can get a call on the program from Dan Loisel, you do it. And that was the 2006 running of the Queen's Plate 15 years ago. The first of three wins in the race for Hall of Fame trainer Josie Carroll, who now joins me live from Woodbine. It is a busy morning, and I appreciate the visit with her. Josie, thanks for taking the time.
Good morning. I can hardly hear you.
All right. We'll try to get a little bit louder for you here. But thanks for taking the time. It was great to hear that call from Dan Loisel looking back on your first Queen's Plate win. Yep. Can she hear us? Josie, can you hear me? Let's try it again. Josie, are you able to hear me? It looks like we're having a few connection problems. Lee, let's go ahead and reconnect with Josie Carroll here. We'll see if we can get her back on the line. But I really want to talk to her about that win. And we have spoken about it before, but it's always great to look back on the Queen's Plate wins. And I played that call because Edenwald, this is the 15-year anniversary, obviously, 2021. Edenwald giving her the first win. She came back and won it with the filly Inglorious 5 years later. This is the 10-year anniversary of Inglorious, who won it in 2011. And then last year with Mighty Heart, who returns to the races today, Canada's Horse of the Year. And we'll segue into talking about Mighty Heart coming up there with Josie here in just a couple of minutes. But, you know, you look at what Mighty Heart has accomplished. I told you it's a horse, Mighty Heart, a horse with one eye. One eye. And we've seen this before, right? What was it, Patch, who ran the Kentucky Derby, Pollard's Vision, horses that come to mind immediately that raced with one eye and had success. But I wonder if you train a horse a little differently, if you have to make adjustments to the way you would normally train a horse. I don't know. But I'll ask the Hall of Famer that when we get her back on the line. Mighty Heart, 5 for 12. Lifetime, including that huge win in the Queen's Plate last year, which, as I mentioned, was the third victory in the race for Hall of Famer Josie Carroll. And now 4-5 on the morning line in today's Seagram Cup at Woodbine. And in case you're wondering, it's a short field. Only five horses were entered into that race. So that is race number three with a post time of 2:13 Eastern today. Mile and a 16th, and the horse that figures to put the most pressure on Mighty Heart, and maybe the most likely upsetter, if you will, if you can even call it an upsetter, is number one Special Forces for Kevin Attard, who has become just a juggernaut trainer in Canada. Special Forces breaks from the inside in the five-horse field. Second last time out in an optional claimer. The time before that won the grade two Autumn Stakes. 5-2 on the morning line. So you have to think the special forces is maybe the most likely one to knock off the heavy favorite if it's going to happen later today. But I love the Josie Carroll story. I love the way that she is such a fantastic horsewoman, and to saddle three winners of Canada's most prestigious race, the Queen's Plate, is a massive feather in her cap. And to win it with a filly in Inglorious 10 years ago, I mean, she was a special filly too, obviously. Special filly winning the Queen's Plate. But that was a special day for her. So we are attempting to get her back on the line. It's obviously some connectivity issues here this morning with Josie, but we'll try to get her back on the line and get a chance to talk to her. But I do love the voice of Dan Loisel when we get a chance to get him on the program. And that call, the 2006 Queen's Plate, was pretty special with Edenwald. All right, if you missed any portion of the show, all you have to do is head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. You can check out the podcast of this program and all of our shows at horseracingradio.net. Had a fun visit this past Wednesday night on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. And for those of you who have listened to that program continuously now for, gosh, I guess 10 years, 11 years that we've been doing Trainer Talk, trainer Brett Brinkman was with me. And it was a fun story talking to Brett because he earned his first graded stakes victory at Saratoga last weekend, but didn't get the credit for the win because he didn't saddle the horse. The horse ran in Charlie Baker's name. And it was a big moment for Brett because he gets his first graded stakes win as a trainer. He's been training since the 1980s. This was a huge deal for him, but it won't show on his record. And we talked about that, and he brought up one of the really big issues in the sport of thoroughbred racing today. We talk about uniformity, and we talk about every state playing by the same set of rules. Well, Brett pointed out that his workman's comp that he has to carry is in the state of Louisiana, where he's based. But New York doesn't recognize his workman's comp if he goes there. So he didn't make the trip. He sent the horse up there. The horse had to be there for a certain amount of time with somebody based in New York, so he sends it to Charlie Baker and wins his first graded stakes race, but won't get the credit for it. The credit is going to go to Charlie Baker. It's crazy, but it is a situation and a topic that should be discussed, and I'll get into that further on a later program. That's one of the issues that horsemen face in racing when they're – think about what Brett went through. He would love to be there. He would love nothing more than to be in Saratoga to saddle his horse. But because of these different regulations, different rules – with every jurisdiction, every state, he wasn't able to be there. But you can go back and listen to the entire hour-long conversation on our website, horseracingradio.net. It's all there for you, as is every episode of Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. Next week, a really cool edition, I catch up with the mad genius, Michael Dickinson, who stepped away from the game and has now returned. He returned a few years ago, but he stepped away to focus on his Topeda Racing Surface, had success there, and is now back training again. You remember Michael became known as the Mad Genius after DeHaas pulled off a win in the Breeders' Cup at Churchill Downs, the Breeders' Cup Mile, after having one race in 2 years and somehow found a way to win. It was quite remarkable. Michael tells the entire story of DeHaas during our visit, which you won't want to miss. It is next Wednesday on Trainer Talk presented by Fasig Tipton. That comes up at 6 Eastern here on the network. So make sure that you get a chance to join me for that because it was a really, really fun visit with Michael Dickinson. We recorded it this week, but you're going to want to listen to it next Wednesday night on Trainer Talk. Poll question. Let's get you an update on the poll question here where we have a few minutes. Again, having some connection issues with Josie, we'll try to get her. We are still trying to catch up with her. Poll question this morning at HRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook. Would you be in favor of NYRA adding more dates to the Saratoga meet? And the reason I ask the question is because they come off of another record-setting meet at Saratoga. Heck yeah, absolutely not. Take it or leave it. It's getting closer. 56% of you say absolutely not. No more dates at Saratoga. No more expansion. It's long enough. 33% say, heck yeah, why not? Interesting question. This can be debated coming up at 10:30 Eastern with Dale Romans and Tim Wilkin. On I Ask, They Answer, that's 10:30. Make sure you're locked in for that in the third hour of the program. All right, going to step away for another break. When I come back, I'll talk more about Tiz now, and we'll welcome in his trainer, Jay Robbins, live from California, to look back on that memorable win 20 years ago. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
Kentucky Downs is home to the best turf racing in America and attracts the largest fields in the country, competing for over $15 million in purses over 6 days, making it the largest prize money available in thoroughbred racing due to the addition of KTDF funds. Sign up for Kentucky Downs Turf Handicapping Challenge presented by DRF and win NHC and BCBC entries, as well as a chance to be crowned the Bet Makers King of the Turf. For more information on how to sign up, visit kingoftheturf.com.
Hey everyone, it's the Baron with this week's North of the Border report presented by Woodbine Entertainment. Mighty Heart, Canada's reigning horse of the year, is set to tackle a mile and a 16th on the Tapeta in Saturday's Grade 3 $150,000 Seagram Cup at Woodbine. Trained by Hall of Famer Josie Carroll for owner breeder Larry Cordes, 4-year-old Mighty Heart will look to deliver his connections a second greatest stakes score after taking the Grade 3 Dominion Day on July 1st. The one-eyed colt, who recorded wins last year in the Queen's Plate and Prince of Wales Stakes, the first two jewels of the Canadian Triple Crown, is in the midst of another fruitful campaign, having posted wins in the Dominion Day and Blame Stakes, a second in his most recent engagement, the Grade 3 West Virginia Governor Stakes on August 7th, and a third in his seasonal bow at Keeneland in April. Mighty Heart brings a record of 5-1-2 from 12 career starts into his latest test. His tenacity stands out, said Carroll. The one thing I've always said about this horse is that he's a little scrapper. Mighty Heart launched his career with a pair of starts at Fairgrounds in early 2020. Those efforts, a fourth and a tenth respectively, eventually led to a discussion between Cordes and a horse chiropractor. In his next start, which came last July, Mighty Heart scored his maiden victory in what was his first race at Woodbine. He soon grabbed headlines in Canada and beyond after his stirring scores in the Queen's Plate and Prince of Wales. This spring, Mighty Heart was voted Canada's Horse of the Year for 2020 and champion 3-year-old colt. And Cordes is hoping there's more reason to celebrate come Saturday. And that's your North of the Border report for this Saturday morning. For more updates and racing information, visit Woodbine.com or follow along on Twitter at WoodbineTB.
This is jockey Orlando Bocachica, and you are listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Well, I told you trainer Josie Carroll was a hard worker, and I told you that she is brilliant in what she does. Well, she had to work really hard to get on the show this morning. We had some connectivity issues to Canada, but she is with us now here on HRRN. Josie, can you hear me okay?
I can hear you now.
Well, we appreciate all the efforts in calling back into the studio. I won't keep you very long. I know it's a busy morning, but I do want to ask you, we heard the call of Edenwald winning the Queen's Plate, your first of three, back in 2006. This is the 15-year anniversary. That was such a special day for you. You came back and won it again in 2011 with Inglorious, the filly, and then 2 years ago with Mighty Heart, who we'll talk about in a minute. But just talk about the success you've been able to have in Canada's most prestigious race.
I've just been so fortunate to have the kind of horses that will get that kind of distance and run in that kind of race. I've had some very patient owners that let me develop a horse, and I think that's the key.
When Edenwald broke through for you in 2006, just describe that moment. What do you remember about that day and the moment that Edenwald crossed the finish line?
That was huge. It just was very overwhelming. But I think it's still one of my best moments in racing was when he was returning after the race and the crowd started to applaud the horse. They weren't applauding, the gaming part of it or what we had done. It was just pure appreciation of what the horse had done. And that moment really, really stuck with me.
Was it a different feeling with Inglorious 5 years later?
It was still just as exciting, but again, like very different. Now we're taking a filly and trying to do it. So it had its own sort of unique excitement to it.
How about 2 years ago with Mighty Heart? What, this horse is so appropriately named too, right? What a little fighter.
He is the gamest little horse, I thought he belonged in the race. Did I think he would be stronger than the other two horses I had in there? I had the filly that had won the Oaks. I had Belichick, who had been training gangbusters. I thought he would run well, but never expected the huge performance he put in.
Well, that was part of a Horse of the Year campaign for Mighty Heart, and I know that has to be special for you. He was also the champion 3-year-old colt of 2020. What's it like to sit there at the Sovereign Awards and to hear your horse's name announced as Horse of the Year?
I guess you're kind of like a proud parent. It makes you feel really good, especially a horse like him that had a lot of quirks early on. We had a pretty rough go the first couple of races where he was all over the racetrack, and were we going to get him straightened out? There were a lot of questions. So it's very, very rewarding when they put it all together.
I mentioned the fact earlier, Josie, that he only has one eye. When you train a horse that only has one eye, do you have to do anything different with his training, or do you do it just the same as always?
You know what, the training part of it, he copes very, very well. There's really nothing different. Sometimes in the barn or in the paddock, in new situations, you have to sort of introduce him to things with the good eye so he sees what's going on. But once he gets on the racetrack, he's business.
Coming up today in the Seagram Cup, it's a short field of five. It will be run early on the card at Woodbine. He is the 4-5 morning line favorite. Talk to me about that race, size up the competition, and tell me how he's coming up to the race.
I hate really short fields like that. It turns into a very strategic race, I think. Fortunately, he can be on the lead or he can be just off the pace. In this instance, we really have to leave it in the rider's hands when he leaves the gate to see what kind of pace we have.
What's his best attribute, Josie?
Exactly what he was named. He has this huge heart. I think he may have won the race in West Virginia had he not gotten carried wide on the turn, because when he gets upside of a horse, he just gets tougher. And when he gets sort of drifting, he maybe loses focus a little, but when you put him beside a horse, he just does not want to let them get ahead in front of him.
The thing I love about this horse is that not only has he had success at Woodbine, but he doesn't need to take his racetrack with him. He's won at Churchill Downs when he won the Blame Stakes 3 starts ago. I mean, he pretty much shows up and runs his race wherever he goes.
And that's what's so great about this horse, exactly. He's just a genuine racehorse, well-deserved Horse of the Year here. And it's nice to see a Canadian horse be able to, so to speak, carry the colors and validate sort of his choice as Horse of the Year.
Well, Josie, listen, you've done a remarkable job with him, and you continue to do a remarkable job with your entire stable. And I know it's a busy morning, so I'll let you go, but apologize for the connection issues there, but glad we got a chance to catch up for a few minutes. And good luck with Mighty Heart and all the horses that you're going to saddle coming up.
Well, thank you for having me on. I always appreciate it.
All right, Josie Carroll, the Hall of Famer here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. And, yeah, you know, I had a feeling she might say that because I had read that. I had read a quote from Josie talking about how much of a fighter this horse is. And that's one thing that has always impressed her about Mighty Heart, is that if he gets into a battle, he's a scrapper. And he's tenacious. And that served him well. And it should serve him well today. But it was interesting to hear Josie say that she hates short fields like this. And you would think it would be just the opposite. You'd be excited. You don't have as many horses to beat. But as she said, it turns into a strategic rider's race. And at any point, something can throw you off your game and cause your horse not to run well because of the fact that it's a short field. You put it in the hands of the rider. You make a decision. Maybe something doesn't go well at the break, and now all of a sudden your strategy is completely thrown out the window. John Velasquez talks about it all the time. Plan A, plan B, plan C. If you get to plan D, you're in big trouble. But Mighty Heart, Canada's Horse of the Year, coming back today in the Seagram Cup for Josie Carroll. And my thanks for her. She really went above and beyond, making sure she was part of the show today, and she's fantastic. So my thanks to Josie for doing that. Well, it's time now to go down the road to the Breeders' Cup.
It's time to go down the road to the Breeders' Cup.
Well, I've talked about it throughout the show. This is the 20-year anniversary of the 9/11 attacks on our country. Also the 20-year anniversary of that fantastic moment at Belmont Park when Tisnow won it for America. Going to visit with Tisnow's trainer, Jay Robbins, momentarily. He is with me live from California. Jay, good morning.
Good morning, Mike.
Happy to be able to look back on that special day with you. I want to start this way, Jay. Chris McCarron was with me a while back, and he shared his thoughts on what that moment was like being back at Belmont Park 6 weeks after the attacks. And here's what he had to say, and then I'd love to hear your thoughts on what it was like for you. But here's what Chris had to say.
There was a lot of tension in the air, obviously. One of the most vivid recollections I have is before the races began, they had all the jockeys get dressed up in their colors that they were going to be using for the day, the owner's colors. And we paraded from the jockey's room down through the tunnel at Belmont Park and across the track onto the turf course. And we were all carrying American flags, little American flags, and we all had hats on that either said FDNY or NYPD to salute the frontline heroes of the tragedy. And as we got across onto the turf course and turned around, looked up at the grandstand, and for the whole length of the Belmont grandstand, which we all know is enormous, about every 50 yards or so, there was a soldier with a rifle, snipers, if you will. And that was a very alarming view, and I'll never forget it. It's still vivid in my mind now. And we all knew the gravity of the situation, how serious everything was. But that vivid memory will forever be etched in my mind. That's how my day started off. And fortunately, because of the great heart that Tisnow has, he finished the day off for us really well.
Well, Jay, we've heard it several times throughout the program. I've played the call of Tisnow winning, Tom Durkin's call, Tisnow wins it for America. It is a time, it is a day that none of us will ever forget, and certainly that Breeders' Cup win by Tisnow was something that was much needed, and what an effort that was that day.
Yeah, he rose to the occasion that day.
Do you remember the day in a similar fashion that Chris does?
Yeah, I was back at the barn though most of the time. I didn't see the jockeys parade. And then I saw pictures of the troops up on the grandstand. But I didn't see a window prior to the first race.
You know, I remember there was talk that maybe the Breeders' Cup shouldn't be run after what had occurred six weeks earlier?
I thought that, too, at the time this occurred. I thought maybe perhaps they won't run the Breeders' Cup. It just shows the resiliency of New York, I think, that they went on with the show. And it's probably something that aided in recovery.
I would say so. What was it like for you, Jay, coming there with a horse like Tiz Now after what had happened 6 weeks earlier? What was the mood like? What was your mindset? Take me there with you.
Well, when he worked 2 days before we shipped to New York, he was reluctant to work. He finally decided it was time for him to work. And I didn't know how he'd react when we got to New York. And the first day for him was a rough day. He didn't handle the training in the morning. He just didn't want to go. And he finally got him around the track, jogged him 3 miles finally because I became upset with him. And then following that day, he sailed in really nicely. He did well the rest of the week, and we got our confidence back that he'd perform well.
What about going to New York for you? What was that experience like?
I'd been back there with a horse named Flying Continental and a horse named Nostalgia Star in years past. And I always loved going to New York. I love the backside of Belmont Park. It's unlike any we have out here. I love the history of racing in New York. And I was glad to go back there again, stay in the Garden City Hotel.
Was the mood a little different this time than it had been in the past?
Well, I didn't notice it so much on the backside.
Yeah.
And I didn't really go out anywhere but the backside. Oh, yep. Yeah.
You know, that was such a star-studded field, too. Of course, Saki and that battle down the stretch, but you had Macho Uno, you had Galileo who was in there, Aptitude, Orientate.
Yeah,
there were some big names in that race.
Yeah, it was one of the strongest fields from the standpoint of Grade 1 and Group 1 winners. It was a very contentious field.
Tell me about watching that stretch battle. And Saki kind of looked like he maybe had Tiz Now put away, but he battled back. Tell me about that.
Yeah, to be honest, I wasn't even certain he'd won the photo. And then I heard Tom Durkin say he wins it for America, and Judy McCarron was standing next to me. He won it. He won it. But I wasn't certain watching it that he got in the photo.
Yeah. Was there an extra sense of pride on your part knowing that you had almost like a Ryder Cup type of feel where you had won it for the United States and for America?
Well, yes. And he'd had a tough year compared to the previous year. The previous year, his three-year-old year, was a piece of cake. But he went through a lot of issues as a four-year-old. I was really proud of him for what he accomplished finally.
Would that be your favorite Tiz Now moment, or was there another moment that stands out to you with him?
On the racetrack, that probably would have been my favorite moment. There are a lot of other favorite moments away from the racetrack, at the barn, that I'll always remember about him.
Yeah, you want to share one with me? What would be a moment at the barn that you remember with Tiz
Now? There were trying times. He'd test you. He was funny. The first time I flew with him to Louisiana, to Shreveport, for the Super Derby in Bossier City. And I'd flown with Nostalgia Star and Flying Continental before, but this time his reputation had kind of preceded him, and they said, would you load him on the plane? So we started up the ramp out in Ontario to get on the plane, and he threw his head up in the air about halfway up the ramp and spotted the running lights on the plane, sucked back down the ramp, kicked out the sideboard on the left side, came down about 2 feet under the tarmac with his left hind leg, I grabbed him. We went back up the flight, and I just sat in the flight all the way back to Shreveport thinking, God, I hope he gets off the plane sound. But he was an amazing horse. He was very smart for a horse, and he had a great personality.
Yeah, he was pretty special.
Everything around him.
And, you know, I talked about it at the top of the show that day in 2001, we went into the day thinking, okay, it's just a horse race. And, what happened 6 weeks earlier reminded us all, it kind of put everything in perspective again. But then when he won and the fashion that he did it, and Tom Durkin summing it up with that call, "Tis Now Wins It for America," it just felt so much bigger in the end, didn't it?
Yeah, that was a great moment for him and for everybody in attendance, I think.
Now, talking with retired trainer Jay Robbins of Tis Now fame. Of course, he had so many other top horses that he trained over the years. Jay, you stepped away in 2013. Do you ever miss training? Do you ever think, boy, I'd like to get back into it?
I really don't. I miss the horses. Fortunately, we live in Carlsbad next to a lagoon, and we have a horse property right next to us. And I've already gone out this morning. We've got four horses on next door to us about 50 acres, and I throw them carrots every morning. So I get my fill of horses still a little bit. I miss the horses. I don't really miss the industry that much in training.
Tell me about some of the other horses that stand out to you in your tremendous career.
Yeah, well, the aforementioned Flying Continental and Nostalgia Star. Flying Continental won the Struve and the Jockey Club Gold Cup. And Nostalgia Star won the Struve and got $2.5 million. I never trained many horses. I probably averaged 9 or 10 horses throughout my 44 years. But Tis Now obviously was the most accomplished horses I trained.
Yeah, he was special, and there were so many special moments, and Jay Robbins did a fantastic job guiding Tis Now through that incredible career and through that Breeders' Cup, both Breeders' Cups, 2000 and 2001. Jay, listen, it's been a delight to look back on that day with you. Really appreciate the visit, and all the best, my friend. Great to hear your voice.
Okay, thank you, Mike.
All right, Jay Robbins, trainer of Tis Now, going down the road to the Breeders' Cup again. That Breeders' Cup, 20 years ago, Tis Now wins it for America. Great stuff. And my thanks to Jay for taking the time there. Going to get to another break. When I come back, I'll look back on some memorable dates in racing history and get you ready for Hour 3, and it's an hour you will not want to miss. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family-owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
The National HBPA is continuously working to protect the health and welfare of horses by advocating and funding research to help reduce equine injuries, lobbying for a national testing lab to oversee and establish absolute uniform laboratory protocols, advocating for every track to undergo an annual independent surface assessment, passionately supporting off-the-track thoroughbred retirement facilities and adoption groups, and so much more. See additional HBPA initiatives at nationalhbpa.com.
And now an important message from Jerry Rice.
As a career wide receiver, I've been hit hard. But no training nor practice prepared us for the devastation of COVID-19. Thankfully, there is hope. Even with multiple vaccines available, we still have to work together until everyone is safe. We all win when we unite to prevent.
For more information, visit unitetoprevent.org.
James Brown and Bill Cowher welcoming you back to Dennis Melvin's house. It's time for the Midnight Snack Run.
This is one tricky obstacle course. Sticking to healthy habits in this kitchen is going to take focus and determination,
but it can be done, JB.
He's already entered the snack part of the course, and he's eyeballing a jar of chocolate candy.
That is tempting right off the start.
Uh-oh, he's reaching, Bill, but he pushes it away.
Great stiff arm.
He's approaching a plate of delicious-looking iced cookies.
Oh, Dennis, you only want one of those?
He blows right by him for the apple.
Oh, the fridge. It's make or break time, JB.
He stares down some rich-looking treats. Uh-oh, looks like he's headed for the soda. Wait, he jukes left, grabs the water bottle, and shuts the door with his elbow in record time.
Unbelievable move. I gotta see that again.
And he's out. He even turned off the light.
That's the way you execute a midnight snack run.
Stand Up to Cancer and Rally want you to reduce your risk for cancer.
Go to takeahealthystand.org.
Hi, this is the Big A, Anthony Stabile, reminding you that Race Day, presented by Twin Spires, comes to you every Wednesday through Friday from 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern here on HRRN. Bobby Newman joins me for racing from tracks like Churchill Downs, Belmont Park, and Santa Anita. We'll also bring you interviews with all of the players, both big and small, in thoroughbred racing. You can tune in to Race Day, presented by Twin Spires, on Sirius 219, XM 201, or stream it live on your home for all of racing's biggest events at horseracingradio.net.
Hi, this is Larry Colmus, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Welcome back. The Baron, Mike Penna, with you on this Saturday morning. Time to take a look at a few notable dates in racing history. And to do that, we say happy anniversary to Johnny Oldham and his wife, Susie. It was on this day in 1976, in the third race at Latonia, that jockey Johnny Oldham and his wife, Susie, at that time Susie Piku, became the first husband and wife riding team to compete in a parimutuel race together. Oldham finished second aboard Harvey's Hope, and Piku rode My Girl Carla to an 11th place finish that day. Happy anniversary to the Oldhams. September 11th, 1982 was the day that jockey Early Fires had his 3,000th career win aboard Volga Ace in the fourth race at Arlington Park. Remember Early Fires, how good he was? He was fantastic. And it was win number 3,000 on this day in 1982 for Early. And that's what's happened, historically speaking, on this day over the years. It was a historic meet for Saratoga this year, and that leads us to our poll question this morning. Let's pass along an update there as to the votes as they continue to come in from HRN Nation. Would you be in favor of NYRA adding more dates to the Saratoga meet, especially coming off of that record meet that they just had? Heck yeah, absolutely not, take it or leave it. So far, 56% of you saying absolutely not. Not in favor of more dates at Saratoga. Interesting. I kind of thought that might be the answer. And I side that way as well. I do the same thing. But I think, from a purely fan standpoint, there's no greater place than Saratoga. All due respect to Keeneland, which I do love. All due respect to places like Del Mar and Santa Anita and Gulfstream that are really cool places to hang out. There's no place like Saratoga. But I still don't want to see it expanded any further. I didn't like when they expanded it through Labor Day, but they've been doing that now for several years, and obviously the proof's in the pudding. It's working. People are betting the races there. But so far, the majority of you saying, nope, no more expansion at Saratoga. And I'll ask that question of Dale Romans and Tim Wilkin coming up in the brand new segment, I Ask, They Answer, which is set for 10:30 Eastern. Don't forget a reminder that we are your exclusive radio home of the Breeders' Cup World Championships again here in 2021. Been doing it since 2007. And our team will bring you exclusive radio coverage of every single Breeders' Cup race this year. And that'll be Friday and Saturday, of course, from Del Mar. And we'll be there all week long with our Breeders' Cup countdown shows Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday morning to get you set for all the big races. Well, 2 hours are down One more to go, and what a third hour it is going to be. It begins with our weekly edition of In the Room with Sean Clancy that comes up in just a few minutes. Sean will sit down with retired jockey Nick Santagata for his always unique one-on-one jockey-to-jockey conversation. At 10:25, Kurt Becker takes you on his weekly stroll through racing history. And at 10:30, it is the debut of our brand-new weekly segment that you absolutely will not want to miss. I Ask, They Answer, with two guys who are never shy about voicing their opinions, turf writer Tim Wilkin and trainer Dale Romans. If your local station is leaving us right now, well, you can continue listening to the third hour of the show nationwide, Sirius 219, XM 201, in the Louisville, Kentucky market on ESPN 680 or streaming at horseracingradio.net. Hour three is next, right after I pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
In the unveiled Ginger Punch, Unbridled Bell, coming down to the finish. Here comes Unbridled Bell on the outside, and Indian Bell, who's going to get it? Unbridled Bell! Unbridled Bell, nosing out stablemate Indian Bell here in the Bell Dame.
Mighty Heart is long gone. Mighty Heart has got the Queen's Plate completely wrapped up. And this is a dominant performance. Daisuke Fukumoto, Mighty Heart, full of heart by eight lengths.
Welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
They're inside the final furlong, and it's Zulu Alpha who shows the way a couple of lengths clear of Arc Low, and back to this is Boxing On. Zulu Alpha is the leader, well in control of the million-dollar Calumet Farm Kentucky Turf Cup. Zulu Alpha wins by four lengths.
And Tisno is doubling on the American Horse of the Year. And the arc winner, or his apart, with a furlong to go in the Classic. On the outside, Saki, Tisno fights on. Here's the wire, desperately close. Tisno wins it for America.
Now, here's Mike Pena.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, all presented by Woodbine Entertainment. That's the way it sounded from Tom Durkin 20 years ago at Belmont Park, 6 weeks, 4 days after the 9/11 attacks on our country, the Breeders' Cup being held at Belmont, and you heard from Tom Robbins, his brother. You heard from Jay Robbins, retired trainer of Tisnow, just a few moments ago in our Road to the Breeders' Cup segment. Kurt Becker is going to take a stroll through racing history coming up at 10:25, and he will share a story and a look back at what it was like through the eyes of the racing industry 20 years ago after the 9/11 attacks. And of course, we remember all of the families and those who lost their lives and have been affected by those attacks September 11th, 2001. Told you there's a couple of winning your in races at Kentucky Downs today. The Calumet Turf Cup and the FanDuel Turf Sprint. The Turf Cup going to see the winner punch their ticket to the Breeders' Cup Turf. And, of course, the Turf Sprint, the winner will go on to the Breeders' Cup Turf Sprint. There are three win-in-your-in races at Leopardstown in Ireland taking place today. One of those run just moments ago. St. Mark's Basilica winning the Grade 1 Irish Champion Stakes at Leopardstown for Ballydoyle. And St. Mark's Basilica going to go on to the Breeders' Cup Turf now by virtue of that victory. And hopefully we'll get a chance to see him. Hopefully he'll make the trip over here November 5th and 6th to Del Mar. Well, Sean Clancy kicks off hour number three, and he does it every week with his In the Room segment, which has been so good. If you missed any of those, you can go back to our website and listen at your leisure. We have a whole page dedicated to In the Room with Sean Clancy. This week, he had a chance to catch up with veteran jockey Nick Santagata. So let's not waste any more time. Let's get right to it. Here it is, Sean Clancy, In the Room.
This is In the Room with Sean Clancy.
I'm Sean Clancy, and I'm in the room with retired jockey Nick Santagata at the end of Saratoga. What's it like at the end of Saratoga? It was kind of bittersweet, or what's it like?
Well, I mean, everybody's got their own opinion. They like to get back home quick, but, I mean, I love it up here. I mean, the air is fresh. The people are fantastic. The racing is great, and it's just a shame that it has to end. And, you know, you got to look forward to the winter, which is, you know, it is always hard to grind out and everything. But, you know, I just can't wait to get up here next year. Hope maybe they'll make the meet a little longer still.
And you've been in the jocks room a long time as a jockey and a valet. Talk to me the first day you walk in the jocks room as a young kid.
Well, yeah, I mean, you walk in the first day as an apprentice rider, a 10-pound bug, and, you know, I'm looking to the left. I have Angel Cordero. I'm looking to the right. I got Jacinto Vasquez, George Velasquez, and it's, you know, it's kind of like, you know, being a baseball player and you got the locker room with Mickey Mantle and Willie Mays or somebody. But, I mean, I was in all of those jockeys, and I still am.
You made it right there with them.
Well, yeah, I mean, my hard work, thank God, and my perseverance, it got me through a great career, thank God. And, you know, now I'm a valet. I have two riders now, and I just wish them the best of luck this winter.
Yeah, who are your two riders?
I have a gentleman from Barbados, good rider, Jalome Sommel. He's just looking to get some live horses, which he'll get pretty soon and make the most of his chances. And I have an apprentice 10-pound bug, Omar Hernandez, and he's just kind of started out from scratch over here at Belmont and Saratoga, and he's just waiting, you know, just waiting to ride a little couple live horses in the wintertime, and hopefully get his career started.
Yeah, and you mentor those guys? I mean, as a retired jockey, you just try to help them out and give them some advice, or what's that like?
You know, I try to help them out a little, but, you know, everybody in the jockey's room, they're so nice over here, and all the riders always, after a race, they'll take them aside, and they'll give them pointers and everything, Jose Ortiz and Irad and everybody. And they'll just, you know, they just want to see him do good, too, you know.
So for you, in the jocks room, is it something that's just home, I guess, for you? I mean, you've been in there a long time and feel, I mean, that's your life, I guess.
I mean, after you retire, you know, unless you can, you know, the best job you can get, unless you get a live rider as an agent or something, you get a good, decent steward job. But, I mean, I fell right into the jockey's room, a valet job. And I love it there because, you know, it's kind of home. And I know everybody in there. And, you know, we're kind of one little big family in there. And everybody looks out for everybody. And it's a great job. It's a great place to make a living.
So when I'm driving on the, what is that, Cross Island or Belt Parkway, and I see that sign, Riding Academy, that's where it all started, huh?
Yeah, the Belt Parkway, right to the right of it. They still have a riding academy called the Jamaica Bay Riding Academy. And when I started out there, it was like 1973 or 74, 75. I took jockey lessons there, you know. And the guy said to me, listen, you're never going to make it. Yeah, he said, you never make it as a jockey. And he gave me a car to be a merchant marine. Hey, I'm glad I didn't listen to him, thank God.
So how did you wind up there? I mean, your family followed the horses, or you just walked in one day?
I don't know. I mean, I wanted to be in the bowling industry. I wanted to be a professional bowler. I worked in a bowling alley all my life as a mechanic. And when I graduated from high school, I don't know, I just, for some reason, a couple of people in the bowling alley said, oh, you're small, why don't you try to be a jockey? And I tried it, and I'm still here. Yeah, it's amazing. I wasn't fortunate like, you know, a lot of riders from Puerto Rico that can go to the jockey school, they can learn, and you know, you have guys like Steve Asmussen, who I used to ride against, and Wesley Ward, and they were naturals, of course. I mean, they were born into it, you know. Me, I had to learn. I was born on cement, you know, cement and smog, and I had to learn from scratch, learning from everybody, and you know, the way everybody helps the apprentices today, you know, Angel Cordero's take me aside and help me out, and guys like George Velasquez. That's why I always respect everybody.
So you go from riding at the Riding Academy. How long did it take to get to the racetrack from there?
Well, I mean, I like to tell everybody, I did everything wrong. I learned at the racetrack, which you probably shouldn't do. You should learn at a farm. I start riding at a track where I was aqueduct, you know, I learned and start riding at, which you got to, you know, you go to a little minor track and, you know, you make your mistakes, you polish yourself up. Then you come to a major track. And number three, I signed a contract with a trainer, which, you know, I mean, it was those days, you know, you didn't sign a contract, he wouldn't ride you. So I wound up signing a contract and I did everything wrong. And I try to help the, you know, riders today. And I try to, you know, point them to, you know, try to make better decisions than I did, you know.
You were just learning on the fly. I mean, nobody's helping you. You didn't have anybody in the no family in it. You really just learned on the fly.
Exactly. I mean, it was trial and error. You know, I mean, I ride a race, I make a mistake, I try to improve. I look at everybody. We didn't have no equisizer that day, you know, so you had to ride a bale of hay, you know. And it was just like I started from scratch. You know, look at Angel, look at Georgie, look at Jacinto. And, I mean, the riders I rode against during the all year round at Aqueduct made you be a better rider, you know?
And you made it. You made it on the New Jersey circuit, New York circuit. I mean, a lot of Aqueduct in the winter, and then you did great around New Jersey parks, places like that.
I mean, I did good in the winter. And when March, April came around, you know, I kind of knew it was going to get a little tough. Everybody come back from Florida. And I just didn't want to, you know, I wanted to ride a whole card, you know, a lot of horses and do a little bit and be successful. I went to Mama Park, which wound up being the best times of my life. And then I would come back again in the winter, in the fall, riding the Meadowlands and Belmont Aqueduct. But, I mean, I did a lot of traveling in my life.
And you won a lot of races. How many races did you win total?
I mean, I won 4,140 races. And I did it the hard way, night and day. I mean, people say, oh, you won all the races. Why don't you retire? We had no slot machines in those days. We had no sports betting. So we couldn't, I couldn't have those purses, you know. I couldn't, you know, the purse they got today, they weren't there yesterday, you know.
Should have been a jump jockey. Talk about no purses.
Let me tell you, I rode 37,000 races, and you yourself and my buddy Ricky Hendricks, and I see them ride jump races, and I would never do it. Those are riders that have nerve and a nerve of steel. God bless them.
Why did you make it? Hard work, talent. I mean, how did you make it?
I mean, I was athletic. I was okay. I was okay as a rider. Hard work. I mean, I would really miss the morning, you know, out every morning, hit every barn, you know, and try to work horses for trainers. I would work horses. I would go out of town to ride for them. And I would try to open as many doors as I can, you know. I mean, there's two things my father blessed me with. One he blessed me with was hard work. But another thing I was cursed with, my whole life was a temper, you know. And I'm the first to admit it. I mean, I wish I never had a temper. I wish I walked around the racetrack and the jockey's room like a Ramon Dominguez. You know, gentleman, soft-spoken, you know, but I apologize for my temper. I really do.
Yeah, I played a few softball games with your brother. That's born into that family.
That's what I said. I said it's in the breeding. You know, my brother, I was intense. You know, nowadays, if somebody's a good rider and he's got a temper, they call it intense. Me, it was the temper. But yes, me and my brother, we do have a temper. I have to say it.
So what about the epic five-rounder Harry Rice talked about? I mean, was that temper induced, I guess?
You know, I mean, if you have a whole bunch of jockeys coming back, you had a whole bunch of everybody going back into the same locker room, you know, tempers are going to flare once in a while. Probably a day or two later, we probably shake hands and make friends, you know. Nowadays, it's just, you know, they'll probably sue you or, you know, you got to go to court. So, you know, it was kind of like, you know, in those days, I mean, you can have a little scaffolding. You know, you shake hands about a month later, two weeks later, and you're friends, you know.
Who won the fight?
I think it was a dead heat, you know. So, probably was a dead heat, so I don't know. I'll let Harry ask you that one.
But your temper, was that something you had to try to control? I mean, you recognize that? Or in the heat of the moment, being a jockey, it's tough to actually recognize your flaws and try to improve things.
Well, I mean, when you come back after a race, and I was a kind of rider where, I mean, my opportunities were, you know, limited. You ride a bad race, you get beat, you know, you think, oh, I'm on fire, the trainer's going to fire me, you know, there goes my business. And, you know, so you kind of blow your cork, you know, you lose a big, you know, lose a race or somebody knows. And, you know, I mean, you see a lot of baseball players. Listen, there's a lot of jockeys and baseball players and athletes that have done everything I've done, and they've gotten sportsmanship awards, you know, but me, you know, I mean, it is what it is, you know. It is what it is.
But you had respect for your peers. I mean, that's important.
Listen, I have respect for a rider, you know. I mean, everybody says, oh, the riders, look at the money they're making, look at this. But listen, your life can change in a split second. Look at my friend Ramon Dominguez, or, you know, look at Rene Douglas and Ron Turcotte. I mean, who was higher in the game than they were? And then look at Barbaro, the owners of Barbaro. And the next minute, boom, there goes your world. And you know, that's why every time, you know, you see somebody that's never been on a horse or never ridden a race, oh, he's chicken. Or you see a guy or better, ah, oh, he's chicken, you know. You get on, let me throw you out of a car 30 miles an hour, see how it feels, you know. And, I, you know, don't get me wrong, that's what we sign ourselves up for. That's what they tell you. But listen, it's nothing like pain, you know, to make you miserable.
Yeah, I mean, at Jockstrom, there's some great days, but there's some really hard days, too. I mean, you've been in there a few times in those hard days the Ramon Dominguez getting hurt, Ron Turgot, Mike Venezia, of course. I mean, those days are tough, right?
You know, if you have a bad day, you don't want to race. You know, it's a bad day. Don't get me wrong. But on the side of the coin, you know, thank God you came home safe. You're going to go home to your families. And, you know, the stewards today and the way racing is today and the way riders are today, you know, everybody just, you know, they want to win races today. And it's like that everywhere. But also, you know, it's a competitive market. And everybody wants to just go home to their families at night. You know, I mean, it's just no call for, like, trying to drop a rider or something, you know. Or you're in football and you want a head-to-head hit. It's things like that just don't belong. I mean, you know, people just want to make a living and go home to your family, you know.
And has that changed over the years? Is it cleaner now than it was?
I think the game, you know, the way the riders are today, I think it's, you know, it's a lot safer. You have cameras a lot. You have a lot of cameras now. It's not like the days, you know, back when Seabiscuit was running and, you know, you can do this and do that. I mean, the stewards are... You know, they have impeccable reputations, you know, to make the game safe. And all you want to do at the end of the day is, you know, you want the horse to come home safe. You know, you want the rider to come home safe. And, you know, you just want to move on. I mean, just it's no call for, you know, trying to drop a guy and have a spill or something, you know.
Yeah, the respect that you guys have in that room, I mean, that goes valid to the jockeys, everybody. I mean, it is a family, and you're working together. As hard as you are as competitors, you are working together to try to keep everybody safe.
Every aspect of the game, I've grown to, since I haven't been riding anymore, I've grown to have so much more respect for valets. The way they work every day. It's just a tough job. You know, you got one or two riders. You got to do this. You got a little window of opportunity to get back for the next race. And grooms are the most unheralded. You know, people in the game. I mean. I see grooms, they're there all day long, you know, and hot walkers and trainers and assistant trainers. You know, you get married to the job, you know, and I have to tell you, I mean, look at you. When you was riding, you probably did the same thing I did. And, you know, you're a horseman, you just, I mean, if you don't put yourself 100% into this game, you know, you probably won't be successful, you know.
You're out there in the morning. I mean, you got them for Kelly Breen all summer long. How many, you get on a bunch of horses in the morning too?
I mean, I work for Kelly Breen. I've worked for Gary Contessa. And, I mean, I get up 4:15 in the morning, and I'm out by 5 o'clock, and it's a whole day. And then I come into the jock's room, and I'll saddle horses, I'll do tack and everything. And, you know, by the end of the day, you're tired. But on the other hand, it's like, I mean, that's what I'm used to. I mean, this morning I had a morning off, and I feel like, I don't know, my body's like out of whack with a morning off, you know. So, you know, I mean, you know, you see guys like Alan Jerkins, Wayne Lucas, and Nick Zito. I mean, we're lifers, you know, Parkley Tag, and, you know, we're kind of lifers, I guess, in the game, you know?
Sure beats the Merchant Marines.
Absolutely. I mean, the greatest decision I made in my life is becoming a jockey and come on the racetrack.
That's a long way from the Riding Academy on the Belt Parkway.
It's a long, long way. Yes, it is. A lot of miles.
They have your picture on the wall of that academy. They must have you as a hero there or something, right? I mean, you must.
Heck no. I went in there a couple of years ago, and I said if they wanted me to teach somebody there, they'd kind of throw me out, you know. The only bad thing about sometimes this game is you're only as good as your last act. I mean, you ride a race, you win, you're great. The next race you lose and they boo you, you know. So, you know, it's a short window of opportunity, you know, to shake your hand. It's like bowling, you know, you win a race and right away there's 10 more pins to do it again, you know.
And for the Fanticipate question of the day, who was your biggest fan when you were a jockey?
My biggest fan? Probably my father, who probably never really got to see me ride. He died when I was a 10-pound bug, so, you know. And really, he was my biggest friend. And I wish that he could have lived to see me ride my whole career. Thank you.
That's Nick Santagata. Your dad be proud of you, my man.
If you don't think those are some of the greatest segments on racing radio today, I don't know what to tell you. Fantastic stuff and an emotional Nick Santagata. You know, that conversation really epitomizes what In the Room with Sean Clancy is all about every week. And if you missed any of his conversations. They have all been so, so good. Head to our website, horseracingradio.net. Binge listen when you get a chance. They're all there for you. There's a special In the Room page. You can tune into every single one. And my thanks to Nick, my thanks to Sean for that segment here this morning. And my thanks to My Racehorse and Fanticipate for making those possible. I'm back after a word from both of those sponsors.
Want to get closer to your favorite stars in racing? Fanticipate is an online auction platform where fans can bid on unique items from their favorite competitors before the gates even open. Compete with other fans to win items from owners, trainers, and jockeys participating in select Breeders' Cup Challenge Series races and more, and take home a piece of the race. Visit Fanticipate.com for more information and to view our live auctions. Own a piece of the action with Fanticipate.
Experience the thrill of racehorse ownership with My Racehorse Microshares. From the team that brought you Kentucky Derby winner Authentic, My Racehorse offers affordable racehorse ownership for less than $100 with no ongoing fees. My Racehorse features top trainers including Todd Pletcher, Steve Asmussen, Richard Mandela, and more, along with a supercharged mobile app that allows you to purchase shares online, enjoy insider access to your stable, and attend exclusive events. Visit MyRacehorse.com and become an owner today.
Not only can you listen to In the Room with Sean Clancy on our website, the archives of all of those are available. You can also listen to every single one of Kurt Becker's Stroll Through Racing Histories, and this week's edition is coming up next. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
Watch and wager on world-class racing from Woodbine Racetrack with Thursday, Saturday, and Sunday post times of 1:10 p.m. Eastern and a Friday post time of 4:50 p.m. Eastern. And on September 18th and 19th, you are not going to want to miss another big 2 days of racing with four Grade 1 races, including three Breeders' Cup Challenge Winning Your In races featuring the Woodbine Mile, Natalma, and Summer Stakes. For more information on racing and handicapping, visit woodbine.com. That's woodbine.com.
Live Racing is back at Churchill Downs September 16th through October 3rd. With the same strong purses back from summer and four new stakes races, you won't want to miss Live Racing at Churchill Downs. With the Win and You're In Grade 3 Iroquois a Derby points race and Grade 3 Pocahontas an Oaks points race on September 18th, plus the new Bourbon Trail, Louisville Thoroughbred Society, Harrods Creek, and Seneca Stakes, this September meet is sure to be full of excitement. For more racing information and to get your tickets today, visit ChurchillDowns.com.
The Adidas Spring Stallion roster is loaded with classic bloodlines and classic performance.
Oh, the classy point of entry would not be denied.
Dynaformer Zaire Point of Entry, a global sire with black type horses in five countries, and the number one sire of Grade 1 performers in his crop. Multiple Grade 1 winner Shaman Ghost, the best son of Ghost Zapper, whose two-year-olds race this year.
And it's going to be won by Shaman Ghost! He has won the Woodward!
Silent Name, the only son of Sunday Silence at Stud in North America, and Canada's champion sire 3 years in a row.
Silent Poet in front of the Neotic, and this one's for you, Martha. Silent Poet's won it.
And the newest addition to the Adina Springs roster, American Guru, from a proven winning family, steeped in tradition, with a strong Mr. Prospector influence on both sides.
But American Guru continues to keep on giving. And American Guru has dominated.
Classic bloodlines, classic performance. Visit AdinaStallions.com.
The spring summer meet is just heating up at Gulfstream Park, with racing now through September 26th, Friday through Sunday. Look forward to the FTBOA Florida Sire Stakes Series starting July 31st. And stay in on the action from the comfort of your mobile phone with First Bet, the official app of Gulfstream Park. For 10 Palms reservations, stake schedules, or tips and analysis, visit GulfstreamPark.com. We are now fully open for public viewing.
Hi, it's Ian Wilkes here, and you're listening to HRRN Radio.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Well, just about 10 minutes away from the debut of our brand new segment, I ask... They answer with Dale Romans and turf writer Tim Wilkin. It should be fantastic. We will debate several topics over the course of about 20 or 25 minutes. And again, it comes your way in just about 10 minutes. Poll question today, and it is one of the topics we will talk about. Would you be in favor of NYRA adding more dates to the Saratoga meet? Heck yeah, absolutely not. Or take it or leave it. Yeah, I really don't care. Well, 58% of you saying that Absolutely not. No expansion of Saratoga. Keep the votes coming at HRRN on Twitter, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, another way to pass along your thoughts. Quick shout out to my good friend Chuck Sharon, who is making his way from Georgia up to Kentucky Downs for the big races today. Chuck is one of the people responsible for getting me into thoroughbred racing years ago when we used to go to Saratoga and fight for a picnic table every single Travers morning down toward the top of the stretch. We'd sit there with his mom and his family, and it was always a great time, and he's on his way to Kentucky Downs. So, Chuck, I know you're listening. You sent me a nice note. Good luck, pal, and knock him dead at Kentucky Downs today. All right, time now to take you on another stroll through racing history brought to you by Lane's End and Keeneland.
Hello, I'm Kurt Becker. Thanks for joining me as I take another stroll through racing history presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. On September 10, 2001, Keeneland Association in Lexington, Kentucky opened its annual September yearling sale. A colt by leading sire Stormcat topped the opening session at $5.5 million. The final crop of legendary sire Mr. Prospector was attracting considerable interest as well. It was business as usual. But the following morning, as handlers presented yearlings to prospective buyers in the barn area, and as consigners were busy rushing updates to the sales pavilion, images of coordinated terrorist attacks on the United States began filling newscasts being streamlined on television monitors located throughout Keeneland's sales complex. There were horrific images from New York, from Washington, D.C., and from Pennsylvania. The nation was thrown into chaos. On the Keeneland sales grounds, individuals who only moments earlier had been preoccupied with selling and buying horses suddenly stopped. They stared in disbelief, struggling to comprehend what was unfolding on the East Coast. Keeneland officials immediately announced that the start of the sale would be delayed by 1 hour. But then, as the depth of the attacks became more fully known, the decision to delay became a decision to postpone, with Keeneland announcing that the sale would not continue until the following day at the earliest. Given that it was a Tuesday, only 11 tracks across the country were scheduled to host live racing. The Downs at Albuquerque, Delaware Park, Fairmount Park, Fairplex, Finger Lakes, Great Lakes Downs, the Meadowlands, Mountaineer Racetrack, Philadelphia Park, Prairie Meadows, and Sunray Park, all 11 canceled. Most racing facilities would remain closed the following day as well. At Keeneland, President Nick Nicholson announced the formation of a Red Cross Relief Fund. It raised $130,000 within the first 24 hours. In the midst of the shock, anger, and sadness, there was also a stronger sense of community beginning to emerge. At Belmont Park on Long Island, located 12 miles from Ground Zero and the attacks on the Twin Towers of the World Trade Center, a sign hung in a guard shack near the entrance to the stable area. It featured an American flag with the words, "Pray for America." A security officer told a journalist, "Everyone has been standing in solidarity. Everyone is proud to be an American." Greenwood Racing, at the time the parent company of Philadelphia Park, raised $100,000 in a matter of days for various charities and relief efforts. On the West Coast, Fairplex resumed racing later in the week and dropped its $10 admission fee in favor of donations to the Red Cross. Los Alamitos contributed $20,000 to relief efforts from admission fees collected over a two-day period. It was all a delicate balance. People were mourning, shocked, and angry. Yet they also were trying to move forward with their lives. As Keeneland's Jeffrey Russell put it, "People are carrying on with their business, but they are doing so with heavy hearts." Another observer added, "Horses can help people see something beautiful again after a week of unspeakable anguish." All eyes once again turned to New York, both in the thoroughbred industry and around the world, as the Breeders' Cup came to Belmont Park later that fall on October 27th, less than 7 weeks after the attacks. Tom Hammond opened the NBC telecast by noting that the New York City skyline had been forever altered by the events of September 11th. But he added that the Breeders' Cup stood as a symbol that life would go on, adding that the day was dedicated to the many brave men and women who gave their lives in an attempt to save others. Hammond concluded his remarks by saying that the thoroughbred is a vehicle for peaceful competition from all parts of the world, bringing together all people who admire their grace, beauty, and heart. A few hours later, Hammond's words would seem almost prophetic as the horses turned into the stretch in the Breeders' Cup Classic. for there, on full display, were the qualities which Hammond had mentioned: grace, beauty, and heart. Tom Durkin with the call.
The American Horse of the Year and the Arc winner are heads apart with a Farrell Nagoma Classic. On the outside, Saki Tisnell fights on. Here's the wire. Desperately close. Tisnell wins it for America.
Tisnell's victory over Saki capped a day which had begun with members of the jockey colony standing shoulder to shoulder with members of the New York City police and fire departments. It had been a day which helped raise $3 million for the National Thoroughbred Racing Association's Heroes Fund. It was a day dedicated to the citizens of the New York area and to those who had perished in the September 11th terrorist attacks. It was a day on which New York had been more meaningful than ever as a host site for the Breeders' Cup. 2 decades later, we remember the events of September 11th, 2001, and the weeks which followed, through the eyes of the racing industry. We thank you for being with us. Please join me again next week as I take another stroll through racing history presented by Lane's End and Keeneland. For HRRN, I'm Kurt Becker.
As always, a brilliant feature by Kurt Becker. My thanks to Kurt and to Lane's End and Keeneland for making that possible. You can listen to all of Kurt's segments via podcast on our website at horseracingradio.net. When I come back, it is time for the debut of our brand new weekly segment, I Ask, They Answer. I will ask Dale Romans. I will ask Tim Wilkin. They will answer. This is the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment on HRRN.
Kentucky Downs is home to the best turf racing in America and attracts the largest fields in the country, competing for over $15 million in purses over 6 days, making it the largest prize money available in thoroughbred racing due to the addition of KTDF funds. Sign up for Kentucky Downs Turf Handicapping Challenge presented by DRF and win NHC and BCBC entries, as well as a chance to be crowned the Bet Makers King of the Turf. For more information on how to sign up, visit kingoftheturf.com.
A 5-time graded stakes winning earner of almost $3 million, Airdrie Studs Collected is the all-time leading earner by City Zip. Winner of the Grade 1 Pacific Classic over Arrogate, Collected also romped by 14 lengths in the Grade 3 Precisionist Stakes, defeating Accelerate. Collected bred full books of quality mares in his first 2 seasons, and his first crop yearlings will be unveiled at public auction later this summer. Collected stands at Airdrie Stud for 17,500 stands and nurses. Think about it.
Hey, horse players, it's Paul Allen, radio voice of the Purple and track announcer at Canterbury Park. In 2020, Canterbury introduced a 10% takeout pick 5, the best value in racing. This year, in addition to the nation's lowest takeout pick 5, Canterbury is introducing an all-new $1 10% takeout pick 6. No jackpots, no gimmicks. Watch and wager on Canterbury Park all summer. Racing runs Tuesday through Thursday at 5 p.m. Central and Sundays at 1. CanterburyPark.com. Come play.
Deep in the heart of horse country, from these Kentucky hills has sprung a legacy rivaled by few. From the all-time greats of yesterday to the breed-shaping bloodlines of today, our roots hold strong with the promise of tomorrow. For over a century, our passion has guided us to where we stand and everything we stand for. Claiborne Farm, the tradition continues.
The richest meet in Oak Lawn's history begins Friday, December 3rd through Sunday, May 8th. The 66-day meet will offer more than $45 million in purses with 36 stakes races totaling $12.3 million. And all allowance races are now worth $100,000. Oak Lawn boasts the richest Triple Crown prep series in the country, highlighted by the $1 million Rebel on Friday, February 26th, and the Grade 1 Arkansas Derby Saturday, April 2nd, now offering a purse of $1.25 million. Learn more at oaklawn.com.
Hi, this is jockey Emma Jane Wilson, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
They are coming for the top of the stretch in the Run Happy Travers, and it is Midnight Bourbon, an essential quality, and now their heads apart as they head for home with the roar of the Saratoga crowd. It is essential quality on the outside of Midnight Bourbon. The two of them are right together inside the eighth pole. Essential quality narrowly. Midnight Bourbon continues the battle on. They're coming down for the finish. It is essential quality, and Midnight Bourbon, essential quality, has won the Run Happy Travers. He won the Belmont with class. He wins the Run Happy Travers with style.
John Embriel bringing them home in the Travers Stakes this year at Saratoga. The latest Breeders' Cup Classic poll came out this past week with three-year-old Essential Quality topping the list of classic contenders, ranked ahead of seasoned older horses, Nick's Go, Maxfield, and Max Player. Did the voters get that right? We'll debate that topic and many others in this week's debut of I Ask, They Answer, with two gentlemen who are never shy with an opinion, trainer Dale Romans and turf writer Tim Wilkin. But we begin with a look back at this year's Saratoga meet, which concluded on Labor Day, and it's music to the ears of those who work at NIRA. The meet once again set a new all-time, all-sources handle record, so it does beg the question, should the New York Racing Association add even more days to the meet in upstate New York? Timmy, you were there covering the meet every day, so let's start with you. Should the meet be expanded even further?
Well, Mike, no. Absolutely not. 40 days is plenty at Saratoga, and I'm sure Dale and the other horsemen would agree with that, because it's not cheap to go up to Saratoga and stay there for the summer. And if they were to increase it, I just think that it would create more problems than not. And I think that 40 days, which they started that in 2010, has been a good model to work with. And I think that that's the way that it should stay.
Dale, how about you? What do you think?
Well, I mean, at this time, I would say stick to the 40 days. I think, you know, the dynamics are going to change a little bit the way Kentucky's going. And I think you'll see a lot less horses out of the Midwest go to Saratoga for the daily purses and the daily races. They may still be coming for the stakes, but the way things are going in Kentucky, the purse structure at Ellis Park going way up, and it looks like it's going to increase and improve. And it's so tough up there. There's not a lot of reason for guys around the Midwest to go up right now. One thing you don't want to do is run into a horse shortage up there. And I do think the 2 days off a week gave everybody a chance to freshen up and get excited about coming back to the races. And this year is an anomaly. You think about it. Last year, there were no fans at Saratoga. And it was nice to go. I went almost every day I was there and just hung out and watched. I didn't have a lot of horses there, but people were having fun and making the most of it. But let's keep this momentum going a little bit longer before we start extending.
Yeah, Timmy, what do you say to the people who look at it just purely from a number standpoint and say, you know what, the numbers keep increasing at Saratoga, that we're doing well when we come here. Why not add another week or another 5 days to the meet to try to capitalize on that momentum even more from a financial perspective?
Well, I get that, but it's also, you know, the people that are putting the show on that come up here that don't own a place, then the rent gets a lot steeper. The help has to come up, and they have to stay somewhere. And you know, this year, I know that on the backstretch, there was a lot of barns that were in desperate need of help. They didn't have enough help. So I think that has to play into it, too. And I'm sure that some of that problem with the help was due to COVID. People didn't want to travel. And I think that they'd have to do a lot of research into this to even think about expanding, which right now they are not, by the way. The New York Racing Association is not looking at expanding this meet at all.
Well, it's interesting that both of you would say no, because that was our poll question today on our Twitter feed, and 58% of HRN Nation saying absolutely not. They should not add more dates to the Saratoga meet, so they are in agreement with you. Let's move on to another topic. You had 29-year-old jockey Luis Saez recording 64 victories at the Saratoga meet en route to his first ever riding title at the Spa. He finished 6 wins clear of 2015 title winner Irad Ortiz Jr., who of course has been the overall top jockey in the country 3 straight years. Is Luis Saez the best jockey in the game today? Dale?
there's not anybody any better. But I'm going to tell you what, this is a if you're a racing fan, this is a great time to be a fan of these jockeys. There's a bunch of good kids from Irad to Joel and Jose Ortiz, and they're good. And Angel Cordero. I mean, you could interchange them, and you knew you were going to get a good ride. If you were at Saratoga this summer and you couldn't get a good jockey, you were in the wrong race.
Timmy, what say you?
Louis, I was on a Louis bandwagon early. I mean, he's ridden the Derby for me, and he's just a good kid and a good, strong rider, and he just continues to improve. And these guys are – it's almost like the Tiger Woods here. They really work at staying healthy and improving themselves and getting better every day, and it's been fun to watch these young guys take over the game.
He's got a pretty good agent now, too, doesn't he, Dale?
He does. Karen's done a good job with him. I mean, he had the best agent in the game, and he retired Richard to pass. But I think Karen has done a great job. Richard handed him off to him and has kind of helped and mentored him, but Karen's done a great job. It's a tough thing act to follow when you go follow one of the greatest of all time at what they did, like Karen did from Richard to pass to Louis.
Timmy, what say you? Is Louis Saez the best jockey in the game today?
Well, he's certainly, like Dale said, he's one of them. I mean, the thing about him that impressed me up at Saratoga is, you know, he rode for everybody. I mean, it seemed like he didn't have a one-person stable that he was the go-to guy for. He seemed to ride for everybody, and he was riding prices, too. I mean, Louis would get on horses that you'd think that the leading rider at Saratoga wouldn't be getting on, and he would win with them. I mean, he's just a good, solid rider, great hands, and he's fearless. He's a fearless rider, and, you know, and it didn't hurt any that he was riding the big horse of the meet in Essential Quality. I mean, his reputation is just growing and growing. He's 29, but he's going to get better.
Yeah, when you're topping jockeys like Irad Ortiz and Jose Ortiz and Johnny Velasquez and Javier Castellano, when you're blowing those guys out of the water, you're doing something right. And Louis Saez is certainly among the top jockeys in the game today. There's no doubt about it. The latest Breeders' Cup Classic poll came out this past week, and it shows 3-year-old Essential Quality topping the list of Breeders' Cup contenders. I mentioned earlier, he is ranked ahead of seasoned older horses like Nick's Go and Maxfield and Max Player. Did the voters get this one right? Timmy, you get a vote in this particular poll, so let's start with you. Is this the right call?
Yeah, I voted for Essential Quality, so of course it's the right call. I was looking at the latest stats that came out, Essential Quality's on top, but he only got 7 first place votes. Nick's Go got 15. So that might be telling you something there that what the voters are thinking. But I just think that right now the 3-year-olds are better than the older horses. I mean, as we go farther into the season, I mean, Nick's Go was very, very, very impressive in the Whitney. He only beat 4 horses, though. Maxfield, who I had picked in that race, I give him a pass on that race. I think he's going to come back and he'll be a factor as we head to the Breeders' Cup Classic. But the 3-year-olds, Essential Quality and Hot Rod Charlie, Midnight Bourbon ran a bang-up race in the Travers. I think he's going to be a factor as we move forward. I think that right now, Essential Quality, in my eyes, is the best horse in the country.
Dale, do you agree?
Well, I'm not as sold as Tim is, but I think he's a great horse. But a vote for Essential Quality is a vote for the strength of this 3-year-old crop. You know, he's never gone on and won by a lot of lengths, and he's just getting by the horses, and you don't knock him for that. A lot of horses will only run as hard as they have to, and he's beating them up. But I'd say if you're voting for Essential Quality, you're voting that this is a good 3-year-old crop. I think there's an interesting twist here with Nick's Go. It's been so impressive. And there's nothing better than speed and stamina. When you get to the front, you have a horse that has good stamina. They're hard to beat. Now, what do you do if you're Brad Cox? Do you send Essential Quality after him? Do you let Nick's Go gallop on the front? In order to beat Nick's Go, I think you've got to get help. I think someone has to run with you and pressure you. And so it's in a peculiar position. I'm sure Brad would want Nick's Go on the lead by himself selling. But when do I go after him? When do I pressure him? When do I try to beat him with Essential Quality? It's an interesting combination.
That's the question I would have, Dale, is if no one goes with Nick's Go, is anyone going to catch him?
Right. You know, and the Travers had put a sense of quality in the race, and he was up there aggravating the horse on the lead, and he finally came and got him. Now, do you do that to your own horse? That's I don't know what I don't know the answer. I've been in those positions a few times, but do you go ahead and tell Louis to attack him early and try to weaken him? And it's your own horse you're trying to weaken, or do you let him keep galloping and try to nail him at the wire? It's Brad's in a great spot, but it's a tough spot.
Well, let me spin it to you this way, guys. If the Breeders' Cup Classic were being run this afternoon, would Essential Quality be the favorite in that race?
I think Nick's Go would be the favorite, even though I would pick Essential Quality.
And I'll go the other way. I'll say Essential Quality might be the favorite because all the attention so much is on the three-year-old racing. But I'm going with Nick's Go. I just don't think he goes after him early, and if he gets a clear lead, he's not going to catch him.
Dale, you mentioned the fact that a vote for Essential Quality is a vote for the strength of the three-year-old crop. You've had so many top horses over the years. Sitting here on September 11th, is a three-year-old at this time of the season, in terms of his physical development, is he on par with older horses at this point?
If not, they're close. And you can look at the history of the Breeders' Cup. Three-year-olds have done very well. And I think by the time we get to late October, they're going to be equal to the older horses. But it's an age-old question. It gets this time of year. And the argument always starts about how strong was this three-year-old crop. And it really proves itself out when they go ahead and hook the older horses. You know, it's the same thing was said about American Pharoah after we beat him in the Travers. Was it just a weak three-year-old crop or how good he was? Well, he went on and proved that the crop was a great three-year-old crop where he crushed the Breeders' Cup Classic group. And I just think that's an interesting component to all of it is it's really the first time these horses are all going to merge together, and we'll find out how good these three-year-olds are.
Well, as far as a history lesson, I mean, I looked it up. In the history of the Breeders' Cup Classic, four-year-olds have won the Classic 15 times, but three-year-olds have won it 13 times, and the other nine were five-year-olds. And last year we had a three-year-old to win it with Authentic. But, the three-year-olds have definitely had a say in who wins the Breeders' Cup Classic, and I think it'll happen again this year. And who knows? Maybe it won't be Essential Quality. Maybe it'll be Hot Rod Charlie.
This is the time of year when some of these horses start to turn and get bigger and stronger. Now, some of them may not mature as fast as others and be ready for late October. But like I knew it was pretty close with the three-year-olds and the older horses. But so the history shows if you like a three-year-old, you can bet on him with confidence and not exclude him just because he's been younger.
That's Dale Romans. Tim Wilkin is with him. This is I Ask, They Answer, our brand new segment, which we will bring your way every single Saturday morning, 10:30 Eastern, here on the Equine Forum. They will debate many different topics over the course of the coming weeks and over the course of the coming months. Guys, let's shift gears from the racing side of things to the breeding side. And on Thursday, the Jockey Club announced their projection for the expected size of the 2022 foal crop in North America. They are projecting 18,700 foals next year. That is 500 fewer foals than the 2021 crop, which was estimated and what we saw here in 2021. Is that cause for concern, or is it no big deal?
I'll take this one first, Timmy, if you want. That's in my mind, it's a short-term problem, but I think it fixes itself. If you go back over the history of horse racing, the foal crop has gone up and down, up and down, and it's all has to do with how the sales go. People don't do any good. Stud feeds lead the way when stud feeds are high, and then all of a sudden the market changes and drops a little bit, and people are having to pay these big stud feeds that they signed up for 2 years earlier, and they're trying to sell their foal, and they're not doing any good. They get out of the broodmare business. Then the sales start picking back up again. The economy of racing gets better, which I think it's going to with the way people are betting and the amount of purse money that we're running for. Then you'll see more broodmares put online. But it will be a temporary problem. We do need horses right now because there's more racing going on with all these racinos that have good purses. And there's, like in Kentucky, there's competition now from Indiana. There's competition from Ohio and Prescott that we used to never have to compete with. So we need more horses. I think we had a few years back, the economy dipped and the horse racing was down a little bit. Economy's back up. I think the sales will be strong. And I think that you'll start seeing that we've hit the bottom and the crops will start growing again.
How much do you think the problem has been with COVID?
Now, I don't know how you can say it's COVID. It's usually based on everything comes down to money. And it's if you can make money with broodmares and the market is good, then you're in. But if you've lost money with your broodmares and went through a couple of bad years, then the only people left are the deep-rooted ones that have been here for their whole lives and have nothing else to do. So everybody else dumps their broodmares. Nobody wants an inexpensive broodmare. But then it always seems to balloon back up. You know, things go good again. People start making money. Sales are good. Everybody jumps back in, so let's try this again. I think it's a temporary problem, but a temporary problem that will fix itself by the economy of racing.
Timmy?
You know, obviously I'm not an expert in this like Dale is, but, you know, looking at the numbers, I mean, this is the sixth straight year of decline. I don't know what the reason is, everyone that I've listened to talk about this, they think it's, like Dale said, it's a temporary problem, and people think that it will rebound. So who am I to say it won't? Again, this is not an area of my expertise at all. So I'm gonna go by what they say and hope that they're right.
Yeah, you know, Dale brings up the fact of the competition and the expansion of racing and those types of things. And Dale, as the foal crop declines, there are fewer horses that can be out there in the mainstream and in the pipeline to be racing. So we see smaller field sizes, which of course affect the handle numbers at many tracks around the country. Is there too much racing now? Should racing contract a little bit, or are we in a pretty good position?
I think we're in a pretty good position. You know, we always have to have a minor league in any sport, and so if you're going to contract, it would be from the bottom. But we need the bottom. We need the bottom for horses that have been bought that can't make it on the A circuit. They need a place to go, and we need a place for people to cut their teeth and become world known trainers at the smaller markets, like most of us did. And I don't think we need to contract. I think one of the keys to the future of the foal crops will be what happens next week. Keep your eye on the sales. I'm driving to Kingman right now to go shopping, so keep your eye on the sales. And I'll guarantee if the sales are good this year, there'll be more foals next year.
All right, well, there he is, Dale Romans, Tim Wilkin. I ask, they answer. Guys, we have about 2 minutes left. I didn't tell you I was going to do this, but we'll go ahead and, since this is the first edition of I Ask, They Answer, and we'll be back next week at 10:30 with even more topics to debate. Let me throw this at you. Dale, I'll start with you. Any type of parting shot you'd like to throw out there before we wrap things up today? Anything that's on your mind you want to get off?
Yeah, you didn't hit me. You didn't tell me that was coming. There's a whole lot of stuff. With me not thinking about my thoughts, I could get myself in a lot of trouble. But down the road, I'd like for us to talk about FBI investigation and what's going on in racing and cleaning up the game.
Timmy?
Well, I wasn't ready for this one, but I will say.
It can be positive. It doesn't have to be a controversial statement.
Well, how about this? I'm going to be wearing a different hat in 2 weeks. I'm going to go work for Parks Racing for the Pennsylvania Derby. And it's actually something I really like to do. I did it at the Preakness. I'm doing it. I did it for the Maryland Jockey Club. I'm going to be doing it for the Parks Racing and doing their notes team. And I hope Dale has a horse down there so I can talk to him.
Hey, I enjoy going there. I don't think I'll be there this year, Timmy. But I would like to say, you know, Timmy's a good friend. And he's great for horse racing. Anybody who hasn't read his stuff needs to go back and research him and read some of the articles he's put out there. He's a great advocate for our sport, and I'm glad to be doing this with you too.
Hey, Dale, I guess I got to send you a check now.
Yeah, you do. You really do. For parking your golf cart all summer, not for complimenting you. We take care of his golf cart at the barn at Saratoga all summer.
They do.
Yeah.
I'm surprised you, yeah, that's, I've been doing that for a couple of years now, at least three.
Yeah, but we missed going to dinner this year, so I'll catch you later.
We'll get it done.
All right, buddy.
All right, guys, well, appreciate it this morning. I Ask, They Answer is officially off and running, and I can tell you it's going to be fantastic every week. It'll continue to get better and better. Dale, appreciate it. Timmy, appreciate it.
Thank you, fellas.
All right, guys. I Ask, They Answer with Dale Romans and Tim Wilkin. Great insight there. You think about those two guys and what they bring to the table every week. And, again, this was the first one. Folks, this is going to get better and better and better, and I am just fired up for these segments. Make sure you join us 10:30 Eastern right here on the Equine Forum every single Saturday morning for I Ask, They Answer. And if you missed it, if you're just joining us now and you missed it, you're catching the tail end, head to our website, later today, after we finish up, a podcast of that show will be available on our website at horseracingradio.net. So the entire I Ask, They Answer segment will be available for you to listen to at your leisure. I'll get to one more break. I'll come back and wrap it up. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Gainsway Stallion Tappet, America's most dominant sire with over 80 Greatest Stakes winners and more lifetime Grade 1 winners than any sire in the nation. Recent stars include multiple stakes winner and Grade 1 victress, Valiance.
Valiance with the lead. Ollie's Candy trying. Valiance prevails by 3/4 of a length in the Judd Mott Spinster.
And 2-year-old sensation, Essential Quality, winner of the Grade 1 Breeders' Cup Juvenile.
Final furlong of the Juvenile. Essential Quality coming forward for the lead. Late run from Keep Me In Mind. Hot Rod Charlie to the inside. Essential Quality and Luis Saez have won the TVG Breeders' Cup Juvenile.
In the sales ring, his yearlings topped both opening sessions of Keeneland September, including the $2 million sale topper. A breed shaper, a dream maker. Tappet, standing at Gainsway.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
The COVID-19 vaccines are starting to become available across the country. And as they become available, you may be asking yourself, should I get it? Will it help get me back to doing the things I love? Like going out to my favorite restaurants, meeting with friends in person, or going on vacation and traveling again? And can I do it all without putting my family and those I love at risk? And is it safe? You've got questions. That's normal. Which is why it's so important to get informed. The medical community has made it clear the vaccines authorized for COVID-19 have met the highest safety standards and can help protect us. Visit getvaccineanswers.org for all the latest information on the COVID-19 vaccines. That's getvaccineanswers.org. Getting back to the moments we miss starts with getting informed. It's up to you. A message brought to you by the Ad Council and the CDC.
Hi, this is jockey Brian Hernandez. For me, there's no bigger thrill than crossing the finish line in front, and nobody captures the excitement of our sport like Horse Racing Radio Network. Each week, HRRN brings you exclusive talk shows, podcasts, and in-depth conversations with the biggest names in racing, jockeys, trainers, owners, and more. Plus, HRRN is committed to helping disabled riders through their support of the PDJF. So climb aboard a winner today by visiting horseracingradio.net.
Hi, my name is Alan Garcia.
My name is Paco Lopez.
This is Jose Lescano.
This is jockey Emma Jane Wilson, and you're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum, presented by Woodbine Entertainment.
Well, don't forget you can nominate to this year's Claiming Crown, which is December 4th at Gulfstream Park in Hallandale Beach, Florida. The Claiming Crown, of course, is the Breeders' Cup for the blue-collar horses of our sport. I can remember all the years that we flew down and broadcast the race. It was so much fun to be part of it because you see horses compete for great purses, and they don't often get the opportunity to do that at the levels that they're typically racing at. A total of $810,000 in guaranteed purses from the horsemen at Gulfstream Park in Florida will be available, and you just got to get there. It is a partnership between the National Horsemen's Benevolent and Protective Association, that's the HBPA, and the Thoroughbred Owners and Breeders Association, which, of course, is TOBA. Nomination deadline is Monday, November 8th, so you still have a little time, but don't delay. The 2021 Claiming Crown coming up at Gulfstream on December 4th. Nominate by November 8th, and make sure you head to claimingcrown.com to get more information. And, of course, you can always contact my good friend Eric Hamelback at the National HBPA. Fun show this morning. A bit of a whirlwind in hour number two with a couple of guests that were not with us when they were scheduled to be with us, but that's fine. That's live radio. That's what I love about it. But you roll with the punches, and my thanks to Clifford Berry from Pin Oak Stud, who kicked off the show at 8:15, looking back on the legacy of Pin Oak owner Josephine Abercrombie, to trainer Jack Sisterson, talking about Channel Cat coming up in today's Calumet Turf Cup, to Josie Carroll, who did indeed finally make it to the program this morning, talking about her horse of the year, Mighty Heart, who will go later today at Woodbine in the Grade 3 Seagram Cup. Jay Robbins, the trainer of Tis Now, looked back on that memorable day 20 years ago at Belmont Park. That was a really fun interview as I went down the road to the Breeders' Cup at the end of Hour 2. Nick Santagata in the room with Sean Clancy. That segment was fantastic this week. If you missed it, you can go back to our website, listen to the podcast afterwards. Kurt Becker for his stroll through racing history. And, of course, Dale Roman's Tim Wilkin with I Ask, They Answer. Just a short time ago, you'll hear that. 10:30 Eastern as part of the Equine Forum every Saturday morning moving forward. Should be a lot of fun. Also, a special thank you to my producer, Lee Della Pina, in our Lexington studio, and to Chauncey for handling all of our social media. Don't forget, HRN returns on Wednesday with Race Day presented by Twin Spires, 3 to 6 Eastern, and then Trainer Talk with Michael Dickinson, the Mad Genius, at 6 Eastern on Wednesday afternoon. Going to be fun. Thanks to everybody for taking time to weigh in on the poll question and for listening to the Equine Forum this morning. I'm back next week with another five-star edition of the show that launched a network. Thanks for listening, everybody, and hey, bring on the Bills. Go Steelers.